Welcome aboard, you people. Starship Rogan Show with Anna DeBlancis up for another day of broadcast insolence.
Yes.
And we start immediately, jump right in. No idle chit-chat, as we like to start with
no
here.
No time for that today.
Gubernatorial candidate J.B. Pritzker is in the studio with us. And J.B., thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for spending your time here. I know this is I was on the Steve Cochran show this morning and mentioning this, and he's like, why does that guy ever come on my show? So thank you for coming on this show. We appreciate it.
And we'll rub it into Steve Cochran a little bit extra later.
Our producer works harder than your producer, something like that. I don't know. That's not true, but I get to say it anyway. All right. Let's just start right now. Let's get the stuff off the table that, top of mind awareness kinds of things. Obviously, you had these commercials that opponents are running with you on the Blagojevich tapes, talking about jobs and all the rest of the stuff and the kind of political conversations that I think often happen in this state, in this town, in this country. But they don't expect that they're ever going to see the light of day. Obviously, you want to have that. You'd want to not have ever made that phone call now, knowing what happened to Rod Blagojevich, I'm assuming, right?
Of course.
Right, okay. But as it pertains to African Americans, do you understand why some of them are offended or worried about what was said on those tapes?
Well, let me just address one thing you said a little earlier, which is, my opponents are running this. Actually, it's Bruce Rauner, interestingly. He's getting involved in our Democratic primary, and he's attacking only one person in our primary, and that's me.
The guy with the dough,
And the guy he doesn't think he can beat in the general election. But look, let me address this thing that he's running, which is, 10 years ago, I spoke with the governor about recommending somebody that I think is a true statesman and has done great public service for Illinois, and that's Secretary of State Jesse White. And I recommended him to replace Barack Obama in the Senate seat when President Obama became president. And there were things that I said, that I was mistaken about in that call, and I didn't push back on the governor as much as I should have. But when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong, and I have taken responsibility for that. But I also want to be clear that, I've spent decades working with the African-American community to get real things done for African-American families, like school breakfast for 230,000 kids across the state of Illinois. That's work that I did to expand a program that President Obama put in place, and thousands of kids who are at risk, and most of them African-American, getting quality preschool and quality child care because of the work that I've done. And I ran the Human Rights Commission, which is the state's civil rights court. So I'm proud of that record. And I do think that people are going to look beyond the political attacks and instead look at my real record of standing up and with people of color.
Latest poll here shows you're leading BIS by 10 points with 3 weeks out of election day. You've got to be happy with that. There's been some talk about the negativity has gotten a little too much within the Democratic Party. Six candidates. I know you have a debate tomorrow. But do you think that's fair? Or do you think that's healthy in this democracy to sort of go at each other a little bit?
Well, look, the two major opponents that I've got both started out with negative ads. That's literally how they began coming after me. And so I've responded to that. But I do think that, from the beginning of this campaign, I've tried to address the issues that are really important to working families across the state. We need to make sure that every child in the state of Illinois gets a quality education, no matter what the color of their skin or the income level of their parents or the zip code they live in. We got to make sure we get universal health care in the state, which I have the only candidate that's put a real proposal together to make that happen. And then we have got to create jobs. And I'm the only candidate that's created thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs. You know that I founded 1871 here in Chicago that's created 7,000 jobs and hundreds of businesses. And it's recently been named the best business incubator in the world.
And you're running against your old landlord there, too. I don't even understand how that
I know, the
happens.
Chris Kennedy connection. It's just
it's such a weird deal. All right, one of the things that you talk to business leaders around the country about is that one of the fears of being in Illinois is that there's a corruption tax in Illinois, that you're going into a state where you got to be able to go down to Springfield, you got to work with Mike Madigan to get stuff done if you want to get anything done, if you want a road built, you need water service, whatever it happens to be. It's just it's very hard. It's worse than other states in terms of dealing with that stuff. We know it, right? We sent a number of our governors off to the clink. We get what goes on here. What can you do to try to interrupt that circuit?
Well, first of all, you got to elect somebody who's truly independent, who doesn't come out of a political organization and isn't dependent on some big giver or some big organization that put them in place. And that's me. I mean, I come to this as somebody who's accomplished the things that I've accomplished, the things that I told you about, without coming from some organization and instead just leading. Okay, that's number one. Number two, I think it's important.
But wasn't that Bruce Rauner's pitch too? And it's not really working out for him.
Well, but Bruce Rauner's value is very different than mine. I mean, I've spent a lifetime doing these things. Bruce Rauner just came to it because he decided to run for governor. I've been doing this. I'm literally standing up for working families for my entire life. I was marching with my mother on behalf of LGBTQ rights and on behalf of women's rights when I was a little kid, knocking on doors for Democratic candidates, progressives. And, you know, I'm engaged. I've been engaged in progressive issues for my whole life. So I think that's a big difference between somebody like Bruce Rauner and somebody like me. But again, I think you want somebody who's got real experience getting big things done for people across the state of Illinois. And no one else in this campaign has really the record that I do of job creation, of increasing health care, of making sure that kids get a proper education.
To that point, this is all expensive stuff, right? No matter what we do. The state of Illinois, we like to use the term broke around here, but maybe we use it too loosely. But we have fiscal issues in the state, right?
Absolutely.
You have a taxation situation where you are at about 5%, right, as an income tax. There's always an argument about whether or not that encourages people to come or to leave this state. You got Mike Madigan, who has really become the Prince of Darkness character in all of this, who doesn't seem to want to get along with anybody, including people in his own party. It's his way or the highway. Let's break that down piece by piece. How are you going to be able to do those big projects that you're talking about?
Again,
and pay for them.
Yeah.
And where do you have to cut to pay for? Because you have to cut something to pay for them. You can't just get, you can't really go back to the well here. Well, it's fairly dry in terms of where you're going to find the money.
We have to change the taxation system in the state of Illinois, because that honestly is holding people back. The way it works now is we've got all these regressive taxes, meaning that people in the middle class and people striving to get there are paying basically higher rates than people who are making a lot of money. We need to flip that around. The challenge we've
got. But you're going to graduate the tax so that higher income people pay more money?
Yeah, and then lower income people.
Why would they stay here, though? I mean, we know these people. You know these people that domicile in Florida, domicile in Texas. They try to get away from the taxation here for exactly this reason. They move their businesses out of here for that reason. Why would they do that?
Remember that every state around Illinois and most states in the United States that have an income tax have a graduated income tax. So let's not mistake the idea of a graduated income tax for a state that has out-migration. That's not true. The fact is that we need a progressive income tax so that we can lower property taxes. Because the big issue we've got in Illinois is that schools are paid for by property taxes mostly, whereas in most states around the United States, the average state, in fact, about half the money comes from the state, half the money from local property taxes. In Illinois, it's a quarter of the money coming from the state and three quarters from local property taxes. Taxes are too high on property owners, and it's very unfair. So in the lowest income neighborhoods, the highest rates of property taxes are being paid. That's just wrong. So we've got to flip that around. And why is that not bad for the state, or why is that good for the state? Because remember, we need to create jobs in Illinois. And again, I'm somebody who understands that and has done that before. Why do people want to come to the state of Illinois to create jobs, or why would anybody invest in Illinois? People who are here building businesses.
Right.
The answer to that question is the talent that we have. Mm-hmm. We've got the most educated, dedicated workforce in the entire nation. And if we fix the tax system so that it isn't so regressive, the talent will stay here. And that's the most important thing. You don't want families getting up and leaving because their kids can't afford to go to college or because our K-12 education system is failing.
You still have a math problem at the end of the day. We have the largest unfunded pension liability problem in the nation. 25% of the general budget for the state goes to pension issues, and the taxpayer portion of that is growing all the time under the current conditions. I think that's something that it isn't fun to talk about, but it is something that our next governor will have to help us get a handle of in order for this state to be successful. No matter how many jobs you get here, you're just not going to be able to make that math work.
And again, the progressive income tax allows us to get there. But let's start with what our obligations really are. We owe an obligation, a moral obligation, to our retirees, to the people who earned those pensions, because they earned them. They're teachers and nurses and workers across the state. And the Supreme Court has ruled that we owe that money to those retirees. So can we pay it is the first question. And the answer is, of course we can. And Bruce Rauner Mariners tried to convince everybody we can't afford to do it. We can't. What we need to do is level out the payments that we make into the system. Instead of having this ramp that goes on forever, we need to raise up the initial payments into it, just like you would on your home if you had this problem. You'd raise the principal payments earlier and flatten out the payments later so that you could manage a budget. You've
got to
do that.
But doesn't that take money away from other programs in these tight conditions? If you're ramping up payments...
Look, we've got it.
It's the same pie, right? The same budget pie.
It is, unless you're actually doing what I want to do, which is create jobs in the state. No jobs have been created under Bruce Rauner. I mean, literally fewer jobs every year than were created by Democratic administrations before him. And we need somebody who actually knows how to create jobs, because that adds to our revenue coffers and helps us pay the bills. We've got to get ourselves on a ramp to paying what's owed. Now, unlike one of my opponents, who actually introduced a bill to significantly cut pensions for 450,000 people all across the state of Illinois, including those teachers and nurses. I think that's wrong. He says he wants to be a middle-class governor, and here he is making life more difficult for the middle class.
Pension reform, would mm-hmm. you support that in terms of, obviously, the rules stay the same for people who are already in their jobs or may be in their jobs over 5 years, but for people who are new coming into the government service, that you change the process by which those pensions are actually funded and paid out? Would you be up for something like that?
Yeah, there is a tier two system that's already in place, and it does bend the cost curve. And let's be clear, there are people who are getting outsized pension payments because they're double and triple dipping. You know, that's what the Illinois Policy Institute and Bruce Rauner like to point to. But the truth is, those are a very small number of people.
And that's a really small number now, because they changed the rules on that years ago about the triple dip. It goes into one thing. But the question is this. Would you be willing to take on the unions here, SEIU, among many others, that would say, whoa, no, we're not going to change any of the way that we do this. This is, you know, these are guaranteed benefits that, you know, the dollars that go in, they have to come back out, as opposed to investing in 401k style.
Well, don't misunderstand what happened here, right? A teacher took a job. Let's just take this example.
Okay.
A teacher took a job. They're not getting overpaid as a teacher. Most teachers are not getting overpaid.
We agree with that.
Okay. And they're getting a salary, and the benefit that they're getting is a pension. That's what the agreement is when they took the job. Mm-hmm. Now, Bruce Rauner, years later, wants to say, sorry, you don't get that pension. That's not right. It seems to me that when you make that promise, when you shake hands with somebody that takes a job and they're promised a salary and a benefit, and the benefit is this pension, that you've got to live up to the obligation. And we can do it. I've told you that we can do it.
Would you support term limits for leadership?
I do. I support leadership term limits. I do. In fact, even more so, and I know that the leaders in Springfield don't agree with me about this, but that's all right. There are lots of things that I may not agree with.
He's been the leader when you and I were in, you're younger than me. When I was in grade school, he was mm-hmm. the leader of the Mike Madigan was the leader of the
remember.
House. Yeah.
We need to do another thing on top of that, which is I think we need to have independently drawn maps, because I think that everybody in the state ought to have more competitive elections. When they walk into the voting booth today, right, in a lot of places, there's basically only one choice.
Right. So we're going to get a new map in 2022, right?
But isn't it drawn by...
It'll be drawn in 2021 and implemented for 2022. That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, JB, thank you very much for being with us. JB Pritzker.
Thank you.
Wants to be governor. I don't know why.
I know. We forgot to ask him that question. What are you doing?
I ask them all why, but we'll see.
Yeah, is there an opening here at WGN?
They're always. Well, this is a little tougher one. There's a bunch of them across the street, though, if you want to become a talk show. But I think you're in the wrong party for it. All right. JB, thanks very much. Appreciate it. Thanks for being with us right now.
Thanks,
Judy,
Anna,
what's coming up at the bottom of the hour? Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720
yes.
WGN. Alderman Brendan Riley from the city of Chicago. He's from the 42nd Ward, mm-hmm. the ward of this very radio station. Therefore, it makes him our alderman, so mm-hmm. we always have to be extra nice to him and then talk about him behind his back when he walks away.
Sure.
Like everybody else does
in City
Hall, right? All right. Hey, all right. Well, let's just start with the O'Hare thing, because it's all over the news. And this mm-hmm. is a big deal for Chicago to get an expansion of O'Hare. When I read the whole layout of what they want to do, they want to blow up Terminal 2 and actually make it an international terminal that'll serve both United and American, and also expand United and American domestic operations in those terminals, and also with extension terminals at 1 and 3. And then take Terminal 5, which I think this is maybe the genius of this idea. Move Delta and some of the what they call spur carriers, the non-hub carriers, mm-hmm. over to Terminal 5, and then their code share partners, and which would encourage Delta's code share partners internationally, which are big ones, mm-hmm. like Lufthansa, yep. to come in to O'Hare the way they used to come in for American.
That's
for United.
That's absolutely correct. And you're right. It's a really ambitious project. The mayor just introduced the ordinance today. Members of the city council will be getting briefed on it by the administration over the next 2 weeks. There will be a lot of questions about this because of the magnitude of the deal. A lot of folks don't realize this, but when we talk about O'Hare expansion and modernization, those aren't general tax dollars that you and I pay. Those are user fees and gate fees that the carriers are paying. It's an enterprise fund. And so this isn't coming out of your property tax or your sales tax or those things. But it is a tremendous amount of money. And I think it's going to be an interesting...
But it's their business, though.
It sure is.
Right.
And there's going to be some very, very hard negotiating going on. In the last 48 hours, I can tell you that just about every lobbyist in the city of Chicago has been hired by one of the two airlines.
Gee.
That will be...
Take a shower.
Hold on. I got a whole list right here.
Yeah. Let me see. Let's go off the list.
How many guys had to come out of federal lockup to actually take the phone call?
Who's still in and who's out? I can't remember. It's hard to keep track. But what about just... Can you talk about the business, the positive impact of this in terms of 30,000 feet up? When you look at it and you say, hey, this is a great thing if we can get it done, would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, we've had it's time to modernize our leases and our gate fees out there. Frankly, we've been doing a lot of deferred maintenance on O'Hare. It's one of the busiest airports on earth. And it's not really meeting expectations as a global destination. And so it presents a tremendous opportunity to improve the efficiency of the airport itself, also to improve the customer experience, which should drive more tourism here. But if this deal goes through, similar to what has been introduced by the mayor, it frees up about $2 billion for O'Hare to make investments in other parts of the facility that they've been putting off for a very long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so...
Terminal 2.
Yeah, right.
But since 1956...
What is Terminal 2?
All I know is I always go back to this, but it is true. You know, we had a World War II mm-hmm. naval attack aircraft and Terminal 2. And it was pointed right at the sushi bar. And I thought that was really... awkward and yeah. odd, and you think I'm making that up. I'm not. There was a sushi bar. No, they moved it. They moved it now.
Okay.
But it was Patty O'Hare's plane, mm-hmm. essentially the kind of plane. It's named after this naval aviator died in World War II.
Yes.
And so you got this SBD Dauntless. Mm-hmm. That's literally, hanging over the sushi bar, and all I'm thinking about is...
It doesn't work.
It may be historically accurate, but it is just the wrong thing to do.
It's a bad message for international tourism.
Yeah, it was a bad deal. All right, so I guess the thing here is that American Airlines started squawking today that, hey, all this stuff was in the paper like it was already a done deal, right? They had the big Sunday piece in the Tribune, which was... Mm-hmm. Bill Ruthart, who did it, an amazingly comprehensive look at this, and it also so well written that you could figure out exactly what it was, because some of the stuff gets pretty detailed. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited. I'm like, this is finally, because I do know, I fly this year, but I got a lot of people around me fly all the time, mm-hmm. and they always complain about O'Hare. And the thing is, and I like the idea, I grew up in an era in which O'Hare was number one by a million miles, and no one ever thought about it twice. Mm-hmm. And now it has changed, and O'Hare still is competitive. I think we're number three right now in terms of busiest airports, but it's almost exclusively because of, in terms of numbers of passengers, because we're using those regional jets now.
Yeah.
And that's not that makes us a little regional. That we might as well be in Des Moines. That is not. I want O'Hare to be an internet. I want it for Chicago to be an international city, which it must be to survive.
Yeah, sure. And that's I think what everybody wants. And again, it's going to be a pretty careful balancing act. We want these airlines to be successful for lots of obvious reasons too. So this will be very. This will be a very intense negotiation for sure. Last year, the city council passed an ordinance that creates a doomsday scenario, that if by the end of May, we aren't able to come to an agreement with the carriers out at O'Hare over this new modernization deal, that these big new fees kick in for them. That's the penalty for the carriers. But the penalty for the city is that we probably won't get this modernization deal done soon, or as soon as we'd like.
Instead of an 8-year, it'd be a 15-year plan, something like that.
Right. And so I think both sides have incentive to find some way to meet in the middle. What you read in the paper was a really detailed, well-written article. I think that represents what the administration would like to see delivered at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of back and forth that's going to occur between now and May, when hopefully we're able to strike a fair deal.
Yeah. Well, I like it. I actually... I applaud the mayor. Sure, I have some fun with him from time to time.
Yeah, you do.
But
absolutely.
But I think this, in this particular circumstance, and unlike a number of others, actually, I think that this, he's doing the right thing by the city here, and this is the right thing for him to do. This idea, too, you know, we're coupling now with this idea of finally addressing mass transportation to O'Hare, mm-hmm. And you know, really making this a 21st century into 22nd century city.
Yeah, those are legacy investments that pay it forward for decades. And
right.
So let's just make sure we get them right.
You know, when you look at the skyline of downtown Chicago, there was between about 1932 and 1970, there wasn't a whole lot of building downtown. Maybe or the mid-60s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It started to kick back in. There's almost a 30-year period. And so you see all these old legacy buildings, pre-war buildings that were built here. That was all the plan of the early 20th century. Those plans were being made 100 years ago right now.
Yep.
And they created the foundation for this city now in the almost the middle of the 21st century. We're talking about the same sort of situation here for this kind of planning. This is when we have to start thinking about how we're going to keep ourselves alive here. And that is what O'Hare is all about and some of the other things that they are doing here.
It's one of the keys, so, for sure.
So I applaud him for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said something nice.
You did. We'll write that. Just keep that tape aside that we can remember that. Like, you did say something nice. Yeah. Is United and American going to get on the same page, you think, on this? That's what all the headlines are today, that they're both arguing over gates and who's got more control and presence.
We'll see. You know, they've each hired their own set of lobbyists, and I don't know how much they're going to work together versus apart. I think American was the first to sound off on where they think the deal is deficient. I know that privately United has its own serious concerns. So those will all be aired out in the next few weeks, and I'm sure that we'll be talking a lot more about this as it develops.
Yeah, well, I want them both to be happy. Obviously, United, that's our hometown airline. And, you know, that's got a very special place here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then American gets mad about that. Like, well, you got a leaky roof. Why do I have to pay for it? I didn't do anything. You're Chicago's hometown airline. Yeah.
They said that United had a secret deal and that they weren't allowed to be at the table.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. I have no idea if that happened or not. I mean, in Chicago, I wouldn't doubt it.
Which lobbyist is attached to that one?
Right. Well, but I think American might be.
This is the opportunity to try and finally get it right.
Yes, I think so. For both. Good point. I want American to do well because American, you know, it's a great airline. I'm very glad that they maintain their hub here, right? I mean, it's the only airport in the nation that is a fully dual hubbed airport, right? You have operations for both airlines and sort of smaller hub operations in some cases like Los Angeles or San Francisco, but you do not have two hubs this size of two different airlines anywhere else in the world, essentially.
Yep.
So we've got that to build on, and we'd like to have some sort of relationship between the two. Although it's so funny, mm-hmm. when you talk to United people and you talk to American people, it is like the Crips and the Bloods.
they don't see the other side.
Oh my God. Mm-mm. They are like, are you kidding me?
Would never fly.
We have someone who works for us who used to work at American,
mm-hmm.
and I told her that I was flying United somewhere. She goes, what are you doing? I go, that's my hometown airline.
You gotta fly.
I have miles on that.
Right, well, that's important too.
Anyway, all right, let's talk about, on a serious note here, I know that that we have, Chicago's lost a great American hero. Here, just not just a Chicago hero, a great American hero, mm-hmm. in Paul Bauer. I know you're very close with him. I appreciate your grief here. I appreciate your very measured words.
Yep.
Around his death and funeral. And there's a story that the Tribune is now putting out about the journey of the gun, legally purchased at a gun shop in Wisconsin, and then transferred a number of times by private purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Legally, until it ended up in the hands of this guy who shouldn't have had it. And, you know, this is a moment where like the shootings down in Florida, the school shooting in Florida, mm-hmm. it's a moment where we always stop and we go, oh, we got to do something about this. And today the president, I mean, he had a bipartisan group of lawmakers at the White House, and they were all sitting around talking about ideas. Some of them were better than others. Let me just be generous about that.
That's true.
But there were ideas. Do you think that we are at that time here?
I sure hope so. I get questions all the time about gun violence in Chicago, and why does it seem so easy for criminals to get their hands on these guns? Why do we have the same offenders committing the same offenses with guns, and yet here they are back on the street? One could argue the state has its job to do to tighten up the way we're handling gun offenders, especially juvenile gun offenders. Mm-hmm. But the big difference between New York and Chicago is that New York is surrounded by strong gun control states. We are not. And so you can go and lawfully buy a gun in Wisconsin or Indiana, but the bottom line is you can go buy a cheeseburger just as easily. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not surprised. We have these big porous borders. We're not checking for guns in people's trunks at the border. And the only way we're going to solve for this thing is getting some real action out of Congress. States can pass their laws, and Illinois is probably going to do that this week, and I hope they do. Strengthening.
It looks like it's moving pretty swiftly in Springfield.
Licensing mm-hmm. gun dealers, more stringent, comprehensive background checks to make sure that folks aren't mentally ill or that these are falling into the hands of straw purchasers. All that stuff is really, really good. But if you're ringed by states that basically have no regulation over accessing these weapons, it's still going to be easy. Yeah. So Congress needs to stop telling us about thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers go so far. They're not getting the job done. And every time I hear Paul Ryan send his thoughts and prayers to grieving victims, and this seems to be almost every other month, mm-hmm. if not more often.
Right? Far too often.
Well, when does that get old enough for people to actually stand up and do something about it?
Or Mike Pence, for that matter, in Indiana.
I'm incredibly upset about this still. You're right. Paul Bowers was a good friend and a phenomenal cop and a real partner to me downtown. Mm. And he spent a lot of time talking about this exact issue. This issue and the repeat offenders, the kids, the ones under 18 that are committing serious crimes with guns that are kicked back out on the street within 24 to 48 hours, all of these things need to change. But Congress needs to lead. They're the ones who can solve for this the fastest. And these guys need to really, and gals, need to stand up and do their job. Catering to a lobbying association that works for and is entirely paid for by gun manufacturers, the folks who make money selling bullets, they shouldn't be wagging the dog. That's not the way it should work here.
Right.
So I know I'm talking too much here, Ro, but obviously the terrible tragedy that happened here downtown 2 weeks ago, coupled with the awful shooting down in Florida, people have run out of patience for this. And it makes you wonder, what are we paying these people in Congress to do? Pandering to the NRA, I do not think, is in the job description.
The president today said, you know, you don't have to worry about the NRA. But then he said, in the room, he looked at this group of lawmakers. So what do you think about moving the age for long guns up to 21? Mm-hmm. And they literally turned back and they go, what do you think about it? Well, no. What do you think? You should consider it.
Yeah, you go
they
first.
Need to know if he's going to support that, if he's going to back away from it. Well, the NRA doesn't like it, but you should think about it. Instead of saying, yeah, I support it. He's not leading. He's being cute by half here, which he does need. And I think his heart and his mind, I rarely ever say this about him either, but I think his heart and his mind are oriented in the right direction here on this, which is that there are some common sense solutions here. They will not be popular with the NRA. This 18 thing with a military exemption is one of them. And some other pieces, the bump stock thing, he says he's going to do by himself, right. But we have not. He could have done that already, and he hasn't done it. These are interesting times, but this is a moment in which I think action does need to get demanded, because you had Las Vegas. Let's not just forget about what this year was like. You had the Texas church massacre. You had Las Vegas. You've had this now in Florida. You have these kinds of things that happen in Chicago. And then people go, well, how dare Chicago talk about it? Well, in essence, that may well be true, but we also have, and you have the toughest gun laws in the country. You don't. We don't. Mm-mm. We have some of the loosest gun laws in the country now because of exactly what you're talking about. All right. I know I've got to. Now I'm doing too much talking. Alderman, thank you very much.
Stuff.
Appreciate your
Thanks,
time,
guys.
Sir.
Thanks, Alderman Riley.
Thank you.
All right. Tom Skilling's going to join us, and we're going to have a tribute to Hope Hicks a little bit later on in her fashion style. All of that coming your way. But first, Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
Go ahead.
my turn now. Here we go. Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. Tom Skilling is joining us on the Super Celebrity Satellite.
Hi, hello, Ro. Hi, Anna. How are you guys?
Doing okay today. Tom. Beautiful day today.
Tom, it was nice for about.
I thought so.
Stop.
4 hours ago.
Sucking up to him.
I know, right?
I got a question.
I'm going to make him look good before he delivers the bad news.
Well, you know what? It's a mixed bag. If you're talking about that little system tomorrow, I know I gave a Bible-length summary there at the end of the newscast, but it's a complex thing. The thing will be spinning up right over us. Every winter storm is a complex forecast. This one particularly so, because there may be some embedded thunderstorms in some of the precipitation area. And if that happens, you get a degree of cooling these things produce, and you get a little burst of snow. But not everybody's going to see this, and we have at least some of our machine forecasts are saying we're just going to go through some rain, it'll taper off, and that's it. Nothing else will happen.
What is that? All right.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm not done being mad at you about this.
About the cold front.
Yeah, but
the pneumonia front.
Yeah.
Is that what we call it? The pneumonia front?
I know.
That sounds awful.
It's kind of like one. We've had worse pneumonia fronts, but yeah, I mean, we started at 59. That was our high at 1250, and now here we are 20 degrees colder in just 4 hours.
Yeah, I noticed even by the time I got into my car and my 3.5 minute commute the station, I got out of the car.
Brutal, right?
It was like dropping temperatures. It was like that movie The Day After Next or whatever. And it's like I got out and I froze. I turned into a human icicle.
I know, it's so brutal.
Well, you know, it's down in the low 30s, according to some of our weather bug sensors up at Highland Park and Glencoe. And these things come right down the lake. And when you bring a full length of the lake, north-northeast wind behind it, boom, you know, the temps crash.
And now we're going to get this little system spinning up over us, as you said. Yeah. What time's it going to start precipping?
It'll start steady precip between, about 4 or 5 in the morning. There'll be some showers ahead of that, to be sure. But so we'll open the day with a cold rain. If it's going to mix up with snow, it'll probably do it between 8 and 10 a.m., somewhere in there.
That's a good time of day.
Yeah, and then it's over by 1 or 2. You don't see that time of the day?
No, right? I'm never up for that time of the day.
8 to 10?
8 to 10, no.
10? That's
10 is, I want to make sure everybody's already in their position before I get out of bed.
Oh.
I might be awake.
You know what? I join you in that row. I burn the candle. We burn the candle
late,
at the other end.
Late,
that's it.
Yeah. I don't get to sleep till after 2.
Don't you have to walk your dogs? Because that's my new thing. Now every day I've got to make sure I get up.
Yeah. Oh,
really early.
Why are you responsible for that?
Well, because that's how it's working out in the household.
Tell your 4-year-old to get up.
Yeah.
Right. You wanted a dog. You get up and walk her.
But Mom,
I'm not allowed to get in an elevator and walk outside by myself.
Well, now you are. Got a dog.
I know. And they remind you, too. They come in and, scratch on the bed and like, hey. Hey, there are two things you have to do. One, there's a walk coming up. And now, I've got a couple of roommates, and I must say it's disproportionately falling on them to do it because I'm the late arrival in getting home.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Well, it's up to them, too. Quite honestly, I think you're paying most of the rent. All right.
You're paying for the dog food.
Yeah. I read the papers. I know what's going on there. And I think quite honestly, it would behoove them to do a few things around the house. But here's the thing. Do the dogs, I got to know the answer to this, because every dog owner lies to themselves about this.
Okay.
Does your dog sleep in your bed? Now you have three dogs, right?
Yes, they do.
All three?
They kind of, it's funny because they'll sleep in my roommate's bed and then they'll
move around,
come over to mine when they take off early in the morning.
Oh,
so I'm like daddy number two or three, you know. Daddy's one and two get the dogs most of the time, but I'll wake up and I'll be sandwiched between dogs.
You know? See, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And it's always exact time of day.
Yeah.
Or a cycle
They're
of the sun.
Bright.
They
They
do
know
figure
exactly
it out.
When it is. They get up the same sort of thing, and then they jump down and they shake.
Yes.
And that's how you know that it's like you hear the collar shaking, or you hear the fur, you hear the
that's
whole thing,
it.
And then you're like, oh god, now what?
There's
like,
a whole.
They're like,
process.
I'm ready.
Yeah, and sometimes they're down to just a single whimper.
Uh-huh,
and if there's a number of them, a pack of them, like he's got over there, they just rely. They look at the one who's the one that goes, all right, get him up.
I know.
And then do you have to get him up and take him out? Then you let him out on the. Outside on
well, we have to take them down
in the elevator.
In the elevator, And, you know, when I win the lottery, that's the first thing we're going to do. We're putting a direct elevator right down the side of the building.
Just a chute, like a little chute.
Well, there's, I wouldn't, I'd be...
A slide?
A slide. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds a little less dramatic.
18 floors.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know how high you were.
They always land on their feet, don't they?
This is skunk season, though. This is when dogs start getting sprayed by skunks. You got to keep your head on a swivel this time.
Well, now we're Tom lives.
That's right, not in this city.
No, no, it's rat season all the time.
Makes you round, pretty much.
You know, one time when I went up to Alaska, these young people were coming out of, they'd been hiking, and this dog was clearly in distress. He'd gotten into a porcupine.
Oh, no.
And he had like 12 of these foot-long quivers through his jaw and, his cheek.
Ouch.
And he was there trying to bite, you know, to dislodge them, and it was only lodging them in more deeply. So we piled the dog into the car and drove the hour into Anchorage, and then
that had to be a long hour.
It was
right
a
there
long,
with the dog.
Well, they sat there holding the jaws open, so you know the thing wouldn't be the poor dog
in
wouldn't
pain.
Be chewing on it.
Oh,
because he was only getting himself in worse trouble. But the vet immediately gave him Novocaine or whatever the painkiller is, and knocked him out so they could pull it out. And watching that process, you think, wow, there would be no way you could get those out of that poor animal.
So they knocked the dog out. They gave him the full, like,
you couldn't do that.
Thorazine for the dog, yeah.
Exactly.
And then it's out. Yeah, that's good.
That'd be like pulling your teeth with no Novocaine or something.
Oh,
gee. You know?
Probably
worse.
Trust me, I've been through that a little bit
lately,
I
actually.
Yeah. I know.
And he doesn't suffer in silence.
Yeah. You're done, though, with that.
No,
right?
No.
One
there's
more step?
No, there's a couple more now. They find more stuff.
That's the worst.
My mouth is now a dental ATM. I'm just spitting out.
See what else we can find in here.
You sit in the chair and you hear a ka-ching, ka-ching. You know, the cash
register. Oh, look at this.
We want to go to Hawaii. Bring that. What's his name again? That guy on the TV? The radio and everything?
Yeah. I've got a kid to educate. Mm-hmm. Oh, look what I found in your mouth.
Well, no, I mean, they're doing the right thing. I mean, but I did more damage in one olive pit. And I did more damage than you could possibly imagine.
Just take out all your teeth at this point.
Yeah. See, Violetta thinks that that's an idea. Because
what?
Because
I live on the, grew up with people from the other side of the world.
Right. Where you just put in.
At some point, you got to just take them all out.
And then what do you just
see, in modern dentistry, they actually have a different way of doing that, Violetta, here in North America, where there's actual running water and other kinds of things.
People brush their teeth, okay.
Yeah, people brush their teeth.
And they run those commercials where they, you know, you can go to that outfit and they put all your teeth in.
Mm-hmm.
And they really do look pretty good.
They do.
You know what? The one guy who's like a works at a casino.
Yeah,
that
one
commercial?
Doesn't look good.
Yeah.
He doesn't look so good.
Everybody's commenting on my teeth. I'll bet they are. That's all I think about when I see that commercial. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that one. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
That one stands out in a different category.
They are definitely commenting on your teeth.
But some of the others look good.
Yeah.
They do. Mm-hmm. That guy on the golf course, you know, who's there and saying, I never was proud of my smile, but now I am.
Yeah, that guy. He does look good.
That looks all right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I'm the casino worker. You know, I was with my hand over my mouth the whole time. I'm like, what kind of casino worker were you if you were doing that?
I know.
Right? Here, I'm gonna just deal these cards with one hand. Don't worry about it. I got a whole hand. All right, so let's. All right, so now we got this thing coming in tomorrow. What's the weekend going to look like?
Oh, it looks beautiful.
Oh,
the nice thing. This is a quick hit tomorrow. I mean, you know, even if we get a couple of hours where it's coming down in form of snow, and that's not 100% certainty yet. But if we do get that, the sun's back on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and really, you look out over the next couple of weeks. There's no real cold air there. We've got a couple of days that are below normal. There have been some indications it's going to cool off, but looking out to 16 days now, only two of the next 16 days will be below normal around here. So that's pretty nice, and we're going to finish winter with a half a degree surplus here.
Oh,
so that's kind of nice. That happened. Meteorological winter closes at midnight tonight, and we start meteorological spring tomorrow with marches.
Woo-wee.
How about that?
Are you excited, Ro?
Oh, my God.
Are you having a party?
No idea. This is my Christmas, Super Bowl, and New Year's all wrapped up into Thanksgiving.
Absolutely.
March 1st is so, because it just tells me that we've made this. There's no going back now. I mean, we can get some snow. No. And I remember, and we talk about it every year. There have been some crazy. An 83. There was a crazy snowstorm in the middle of March. I remember one that was at the very end of April. There was a crazy snowstorm.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
But you can have stuff like that. But I'm sorry, the end of March.
But it doesn't last.
It doesn't last.
That's true.
And the days are long. And hold on.
Yeah.
You're burying the lead, Tom Skilling, my hero.
What is this?
What's the lead?
Because on the night of the 10th into the 11th of March, which is a week and a half away, we change the clocks.
That's right.
True.
Yeah.
We go back to daylight saving time.
See, I haven't even allowed myself to think about that. It just seems so far off. But, yeah, now we can really... You contemplate that and celebrate the fact. It's pretty cool.
Exactly right. So, I mean, we got these, I got that sunlight in here and all that stuff. Just trying to get myself going.
I like
going.
That you wake up even at 6:30 now, you see the sun.
That's true.
Who's waking up at 6:30?
Yeah, I have the puppy that I have to get up. This is what we're talking about.
I see.
The puppy needs to go out.
That's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We know what happens.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's
really not cute. Nice.
It's the only reason that I currently don't have a dog because I'd be responsible for all of the walking of the dog.
But I'm told as their little bladders get bigger that they can go longer. Mm-hmm. So the 6:30 is where it is now, but hopefully in a couple months it's going to be more like 8:30. That's what
now,
they tell me.
But it's the same time. The thing is that just keeps them from having accidents in the middle of the day.
Don't tell me that, Ralph.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't want to know about...
The overnight is always the overnight.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is all these fluids they sell that are supposed to get rid of, cat and dog stains.
Doesn't work.
They don't work. I haven't found one yet that works reliably.
It's supposed to keep them from knowing that it's there. And they're like, hey... I don't smell it, but this is where I was yesterday.
What do you think, we're stupid? I remember I went here just the other day.
Yeah, it doesn't
they
really
go
smell
back to
like
the
it
same spot
so much
that's
anymore.
Right.
So I have to do it again.
But it smells like this thing.
Right.
And I know this.
What if another dog comes in? They need to know where it's my place.
This is my territory.
I can see, too. It's not just smelling.
Well, I remember this couch.
Remember those? The problem with cats is when I had my cats, you need those UV lights that you go over the carpeting to figure. You can smell it, but you can't figure out where it is.
Oh, it's the worst.
So
this is one that when I was sentenced to living with a cat for a number of years, and the cat in his this is really sort of at the apex of his a-holery.
Yes.
He had. Decided that the couch. I just bought this new couch. I loved this couch. I was so
what
proud
color?
Of it. It was like a suede-y kind of thing.
Okay, light colored though.
Kind of caramel colored.
Mm. Uh-huh.
And it was. I'm not selling it, but it was beautiful. It was the 90s. It made sense. All right. So, and I'm having a Super Bowl party, and it was the year that the Green Bay Packers won the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
So I'm having a Super Bowl party, and we sit down on the couch, and all of a sudden I'm smelling something.
The
worst.
And I'm looking at the cat, and there's people at the house, and I don't want to go, oh my God, I'm sitting in cat pee.
I know.
But I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at the cat, and the cat's looking at me. Like,
yeah,
I got you now, don't I? Right? It's sort of like, see that? Oh, new couch. You think that's your couch, right?
I know. It's just
bad.
It's really sad. My little kitty, the kidneys started going.
Oh, God.
So,
poor thing.
That's when the litter box was abandoned and, their little patches started showing up elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I discovered quickly all these stain removers.
Yeah, you
don't
go
work.
Through them, don't you?
No,
thinking
no,
the next
you do.
One will work better.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Well, the enzyme ones, they work in 30 years. I mean, by then. All the enzymes will have eaten everything they could possibly get their enzyme mouth around, and that would be fine. But it's not, it's not like, you put it on, it's, tomorrow it's going to be just fine. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Look, the stain's gone, but so's the carpeting. You've just got a little.
And then once the cat's got it figured out, and the cat's like, what are you going to do about it?
That's it.
What are you going to do about it? You going to throw me out? Okay, go ahead. Throw me out.
Right.
Tough guy.
Right.
Yeah. And then they'll drop down and get on their back or
and
something.
They're so sweet.
Right.
And
then
rub against your leg and be all sweet.
Right.
They do. They know what they're doing.
They have one. They're like a bad girlfriend. They have like one move that they know they get you on all the time. Oh, that's okay. I know you pulled a gun on me last week, but that's fine.
Gee.
Bro, you're telling us a lot about yourself.
Anna, really? I don't know. Are you okay over there?
We just went to a very dark place, and I'll apologize for that, okay? I thought we were talking about sweet little kitty cats. Things went really wrong.
All right, I got to go. Wait, did I say that out loud? All right, here we go. Tom, thank you very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Great to talk to you. You too, Anna.
Okay.
See you later. Tom. Bye, guys. Mm-hmm.
Judy was coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, Coach.
I got a couple questions.
Hmm. Yeah, Coach Fox.
I just saw that my team, the Chicago Bears, have just let go of Mike Glennon.
Well, Coach, it's not your team anymore.
What?
Remember, they fired you, Coach. It means you're no longer a part of the Chicago Bears organization.
I'm not the head coach.
You're not the head coach.
Who is?
That'd be Matt Nagy. Or Nagy.
We're not sure his name, but that's the problem. There is a coach.
Nobody knows.
It's not you.
Yeah.
He said it's sort of like the Mitch Mitchell thing. He goes, you could say Nagy or Nagy.
I just got to clear it up.
I don't believe any of this is true. I'm going to check it myself later. But in the meantime,
yes.
Which one is Glennon?
Glennon was the tall one, red hair, tall.
Okay.
Long
tall drinking water.
Oh, right. The one that he was quarterback.
He was a quarterback, yeah. Got like $18 million last year.
Yeah, he really wasn't good.
No.
$45 million contract.
Yeah.
Yeah, but only part of it was guaranteed.
Yeah, he'll get about 18 or 19 total.
Total, deal, right.
And only.
Then, yeah, but, you know, that's the way it goes.
Per start, by the way, he made $4.6 million. Per touchdown pass, $4.6 million. Per passing yard, $22,000.
Stop.
And per turnover, $2.6 million.
Who's the smart one? Oh, gosh. Yeah. I need to cry on that one, I think.
Yeah, however you want to break it down, those numbers are a bit staggering considering his performance on the field.
Oh, my God. Well, he looked like Hodor when he was out on the field, you know, for my Game of Thrones fans out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, he moved like...
slow motion.
Yeah, he like a statue. It was like, I could go out there and move like that.
You watch highlights and be like, okay, play it in normal speed now.
Yeah, like Campanobi said, he's not athletic. He's not good in the pocket. He's not good at, what did they say? They just went through the whole thing and what?
Five interceptions in four games.
He had a monster arm. If you're a defender, you know, then that works out. If you're a defensive back, you loved when he was throwing the ball.
The bright side of his disaster on the field, like if he did play well, it would have been a lot easier for the Bears to just keep Trubisky on the sideline while all Bears fans were screaming for Trubisky. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if Glennon wasn't great, but just not as big as a disaster as he was. So I guess the bright side is it was actually a better thing. He was horrible because we were able to see Trubisky in week five. He could start getting reps, start getting... you know, experience in the NFL instead of standing on the sideline.
Well, you're not going to pay $18 million a year for a backup, right?
Yeah,
that's the problem. Yeah. So now who are they going to get as a backup, though?
Well, Mark Sanchez, remember, we heard a lot about how he had built this relationship with Trubisky, and honestly, I'd be just fine with that. I mean, if you're starting quarterback...
Mark Sanchez is like...
85? Isn't he? How old is he?
Not only that, he's like 85 and frail. It's not even like he's you know, like older, but you know, fit and he's able to do it. I mean, he was sometimes he was like he would show up on the sidelines with a cast on a different bone every week.
Every time. Well, so wait a minute, I thought the other hand or the
well, okay, even if he isn't your primary backup, maybe he's your third. Quarterback.
Make him a coach. Make him a quarterback coach. I don't care.
Keep him around.
Fine. I mean, Mark Sanchez is a smart guy. He's apparently a very good leader.
Oh, that's good.
The teams he's been on before, they've liked him as a, you know, as a good clubhouse guy, good locker room guy. The issue is you need a guy who's going to be able to go play for you. And I don't think that Mark Sanchez is going to be that guy. So, I mean...
Chase Daniels is a name that's been thrown out there as well. He has some ties to Ryan Pace. But none of the free agent quarterbacks get you all excited. There's a reason they're free agents. You know, most quarterbacks, if you're...
Well, no. But you don't want to pay... I mean, a real free agent quarterback, you know, a guy who's like, you know, that would be great. You know, like you know, what's his face? It just went from Kansas City to Washington. You know, you get
Alex
guys
Smith.
Like Alex Smith. You get guys like that... You know, that's one thing, but this is a totally
Trubisky's going to be the starter. So are you going to pay a top end free agent quarterback if there even is such a thing? You're going to pay him $15 million to sit on the sideline?
I know this sounds crazy. It doesn't sound crazy. Because they're going to have a fairly decent, what are they, a sixth? What, seventh, right?
Eighth pick.
Eighth?
Yeah.
It keeps moving in my own head. I keep thinking it's going to be better than it's going to be.
Hoping.
You know, you wonder. Well, they have a lot of needs. They need a wide receiver.
A lot of needs. A lot of people are linking them to Quentin Nelson, the guard from Notre Dame, who a lot of people are really excited about. Easily the best lineman in the draft. You've heard his name.
What about that Alabama guy, though?
Calvin Ridley, the receiver. Mm-hmm. I think the
But Calvin Ridley had an injury problem, right? Isn't that one of the concerns?
I think he was mostly healthy, but I think the concern with taking Ridley is it feels like a bit of a reach rather than taking best available. Is he a top 10 pick? Most people don't think so. But the Bears really, really need help at the receiver position. Yeah. So do you reach and take a receiver who's probably not a top 10 value guy, or do you get a sure bet in Quentin Nelson at the guard spot, even if he's still available? So the eighth pick.
But I think they go for a quarterback.
Of course.
You know what? Well, no, I was going to ask, it's going to sound really crazy, but I was thinking, you do need a backup. And so I'm thinking, the offensive line, though, now is Josh Sitton gone.
Right. Nelson would fit perfectly into that spot.
We don't know what we're dealing with Kyle Long.
Right, who's had about 48 surgeries this offseason, it feels like.
Right. Well, the biggest one is above the shoulders, and I'm not sure they're going to do that surgery in time. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of other issues on there.
What happens to Mike Glennon now? He done officially, would you say? Or does someone pick him up as a backup?
Yeah, I think he'll get signed eventually somewhere. He's certainly not
going to
get
it. Hodor! He would do that in which I thought was really weird, in the huddle. All right, what's the play? Hodor! And then they all look at each other.
He had such a positive attitude when we first came here. I just wanted him to be good. We knew he wouldn't be great, but I wanted him to be good.
I didn't really care if he was good or not because I don't know. Once they drafted Trubisky, everything changed.
It did.
You know, 2 weeks before they drafted Trubisky, they signed the guy, and he's like, "It's my year."
Thank God they drafted him or anybody, right? I mean, he could have ended up.
Maybe. Well, a lot of people have been called. They're not. A lot of Bears fans aren't fans of Ryan Pace right now. Imagine if Pace didn't draft Trubisky. Mm-hmm. Even though people have gotten on him about moving up and probably paying a little bit too much to move up one spot in the draft to get Trubisky. Imagine if they didn't have Trubisky last year. There would have been no hope. It would have been a typical Bears season. A free agent quarterback who's terrible on the field. Okay, now next year we got to look at the quarterbacks who are available. That really helped Ryan Pace's job. He's linked himself to to Mitch Trubisky now.
But Mitch Trubisky's got to stay healthy, and it's tough in the NFL. I mean,
it's true.
You know, you can work your keister off in the offseason, which apparently Trubisky's doing. He's at Halas Hall all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He's committed to this thing. He seems like there's so much hope on his skill set. And the funny thing is, he doesn't have that much experience.
No, not at all. He started 1 year at North Carolina, and that's why everyone was like, just get him on the field in his rookie season. And I think everybody was pretty happy to see him in week 5, because we all thought the Bears were going to drag this on till the middle of the season. So now it's about getting him help. And Matt Nagy, the head coach, is an offensive guy. That's why they went with him. And now maybe they do add another offensive lineman to protect the most valuable player on your team.
Did you see Matt Forte?
Yeah.
Has retired from the Jets. He's retired from the football.
Yeah,
completely.
From the NFL, and had a nice
great
post
career.
Thanking Bears fans in particular for all their support.
He's probably part of the crop of players that you see in all sports that are probably just below the Hall of Fame threshold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe if he had been able to go for a couple more years at a high level, but doesn't mean he didn't have an outstanding career.
Right. He was great to watch.
Just missed the 10,000, 5,000 yard mark. 10,000 rushing, 5,000 receiving. I think only three players have ever done that.
Yeah.
And he was right there. Just
yeah, he probably does not make the Hall of Fame.
Probably not. But
he's spectacularly great football player. And this letter that he wrote is one of the. It's in the Tribune's got it on their
it's
website.
Beautiful.
But I just want to excerpt a couple things out of it that I think are just amazing. Mm-hmm. He said, for the past 10 years, I've been blessed to play professionally a game that I've loved since I was 6. But after much prayer and reflection, I've decided to retire from the NFL. Like so many others before me, this game has enhanced my life in numerous ways. It has been nothing short of a miracle granted by God and put on display for His glory. I will cherish the many memories made on the field and lifelong friends I've made over the years in the locker room. I'm even more grateful that God blessed me with Gene and Gilda Forte, my two amazing parents.
Oh, Sweet.
When my mother hears this, she's going to be so mad at me that I did not write this letter.
Well, he thanks his coaches, his teachers, and he thanks the McCaskey family, the entire Bears organization. He's just, you know, it's so gracious, and he really does seem deeply appreciative of his the opportunities he got and the to be part of the tradition of the Chicago Bears.
Let me read this part, because this gets me every time.
I know.
Lastly,
I know,
to all Chicago Bears fans, you're truly the best fans in all of professional sports. Thank you for embracing my family and me from day one. The roar of the crowd at Soldier Field as I'd break a run or make a big catch will forever be ingrained in my mind. The past 25 years playing America's game has left me with unparalleled joy, but it's time to go. God bless and bear down.
Oh,
how about that?
Oh, goosebumps.
Yeah. He'd be going in as a Bear if he got in the Hall of Fame, I'll tell you that. He also thanks his in-laws for having...
No way.
He thanks his in-laws for giving birth to his wife, is basically what he does in here.
God, he goes way back.
That's something.
Did he thank the in-laws' parents for giving birth to the in-laws as well?
Matt didn't go that far back.
Matt Forte, no players gained more scrimmage yards in the past decade than Matt Forte, more than Adrian Peterson, Frank Gore, LeSean McCoy, 14,000 yards from scrimmage.
Mm. His jersey.
He's great.
22. Number 22 in your...
It's kind of an important number to me.
Roster sheet number one in your heart.
Yeah.
Great career.
Yes.
I think pretty easily the third best running back of all time for the Bears, behind Peyton and Sayers.
Sayers, yeah.
Yeah, I think he does, right? Statistically, for sure. And I mean...
Even statistically, probably more than Sayers, but Sayers was so short. His career was so short.
Right, but total yards, though, with Sayers, because he was also return kicks.
Right. All right.
So, I think it's safe to say he had a good run.
He did have a good run.
He
had a very good run.
Great run. And what a beautiful letter that is. And, you know, it puts in mind, this is the important thing I just want to... When I read this morning, all I would think about was that it puts in mind your experience at Soldier Field, or if you're sitting at home on a Sunday and you're watching and you get excited, and we get into it in a way. And here's a guy who's played in every NFL stadium, and he's played, and you know, New York Jets fans are rabid too. Yep. They got that fat guy, Fireman Ed, that screams around.
It does the JETS,
Jets thing. Yeah. I mean, they got that whole thing.
I was looking at the letter and just thinking, it's just like the one that Cutler wrote when he left. You know, so similar.
But I mean, isn't that the great? I mean, it's such a what a wonderful. Thing.
It's beautiful.
And it reminds you how what a special fraternity Bears fans have. Mm. You know, that it's and that, because even in these dreg last couple of years, when something good happens on the field, I mean, that's a loud stadium and it's totally fun to be in it.
Yeah, he's won the Bears fan base over, which is pretty clear. You'll see 4K jerseys at Soldier Field for a long time.
Yeah, let me just tell you this. You're seeing nothing but retired guys' jerseys for, I think, the next
Urlachers,
two or three seasons.
And you'll
see some Trubisky's.
Yeah, that's about it.
And it's going to be hot girls in Trubisky jerseys at this point, because the guys are like, hey, I'm holding out. I'm waiting. Wearing Urlachers going in the hall.
Get me my Kreutz jersey.
Right. Right. The hot girls, you know, buy the children's Trubisky jersey because it's super tight on them.
Or you can go with an extra large and make it a dress.
Yes.
That's true.
Right.
Belt
you
can
do that too. And you belt it, right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He might just notice you if you wear one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here is... would Violetta getting noticed? What? All right. Here is Judy Pilak with the WGN News tease for the top of the hour. What's happening? Blondes is right here on 720 WGN. Mm-hmm. Coming up, Tom Dart, the county sheriff, is going to join us.
Nice.
We've had quite a day here. It's been a very political show. We got J.B. Pritzker on to start, Brendan Riley, now Tom Dart. Mm-hmm. Got to get a Republican in here. Except they're too busy wondering what the president's going to say. Oh, man. Although Kira Phillips is going to join us coming up in just a little bit. Kira Phillips, people may remember her from CNN.
Oh, yeah.
She has written a book about Billy Graham and her experiences with him. She's got a fascinating story about her, you know, her about Billy Graham and what you know, he meant to America and what he meant to her specifically. Kind of interesting stuff. Hmm. So that's coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. You don't want, not want to miss that.
No.
Because he is laying in honor at the, is that what they're calling it, right?
Yeah, laying in honor.
Laying in honor in the
the U.S. Capitol today, yep. The body.
One of only four civilians ever to have had that. Rosa Parks being the other, actually civilians, because the other two were Capitol Police officers who were killed.
Oh, gee.
So, while protecting the Capitol. So, really pretty amazing stuff. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But right now, you know what it's time for, don't you?
We do.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in.
Number five.
At.
Number five. Thanks, Orion. You got to keep up with Orion, okay?
Come on. I do. I know. Orion is always the fastest guy on this show.
He's quick thinking.
Yep. All right. Now, here's the deal. J.B. Pritzker was here a little bit earlier today, and we asked him, why does he want this job? What does he do? Why? Why you? Why you? Of all the people.
And why?
Running,
why?
Why? Why? But, now, the question is this. How do you feel, JB? We had to go there. It started right off, right at the very top. You know, this ad that's been running has been pretty effective.
Oh, yeah.
He's on the Blago tapes, and he's talking about Jesse White, and he's talking about Jesse Jackson Jr., his crass, and all of that. And, well,
there were things that I said, you know, that I was mistaken about in that call, and I didn't push back on the governor as much as I should have. But when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong, and I have taken responsibility for that. But I also want to be clear that, you know, I've spent decades working with the African-American community to get real things done for African-American families. And I do think that people are going to look beyond the political attacks and instead look at my real record of standing up and with people of color.
All right.
And right now, if you look at the latest Illinois statewide poll, he's ahead of Biss by 10%. Kennedy with just slightly trailing Biss by a few percentage, too. But you still have that big chunk of undecided, nearly 30% of voters still not sure who they would vote for in the primary, Democratic primary.
Okay. I think this could be tighter than people think.
You might be right. You never know where those people are going to swing.
We're under 3 weeks now. Yeah, 3 weeks from yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So times are coming. Although I got to say that the commercials, you know, most people vote on the commercials. And they go, well, the commercials don't count. They totally count. They count for almost everything.
Yeah.
As it turns out. And I got to say that JB's got the most professional kind of commercials.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where they're, you know, he's sitting there. He's got, everybody's got, have you noticed this? I noticed this with our old friend John Fritchie. He's got a commercial as he's running for county, his seat on the county board.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's reading to kids, and there's a point in every commercial where they're sitting down somewhere
true.
And they're reading to kids.
It's a classic political kind of photo op, isn't it? I care about education. I care about children, both communicated with one visual.
And, you know, what I know about life is that people don't really enjoy reading to kids. I mean, even your own kids. Dads, I mean, moms might enjoy it, but dads are like,
I enjoy it.
All right, fine, I'll read to the kids. Oh, they got to kind of get into it.
One of my favorite moments at the end of the night. I get to read a story to my daughter in bed. No, it's true. Oh.
It's your own kids. It's one thing. Although even that's enough.
But it's a whole bratty second grade. Right. If it's like, forget
it's a bunch
it.
Of, if it's other people's kids, it's sort of like, why do you want to sit around and read to them? And everybody seems to be enjoying it, you know? Like, oh, look at this. Oh.
Well, I think I always notice that the kids are so well-behaved in those pictures, and everybody's listening intently
right.
to the speaker.
They're all child actors.
Yeah.
Abtalia.
I know about that.
Yeah. There's J.B. Pritzker sitting in like a little kindergarten chair, like reading to kids, right? And then there's John Fritchie sitting on like a couch. He's got a couple of kids and he's, you know, showing them pictures. And all I can think about is what's on that picture. And then there's Daniel Biss,
mm-hmm.
where he's reading to his kids, and then he's reading an electric bill with his wife at their, like, in their kitchen.
Well, his ads project every man to me. You know, here I am. I live in a house, just a modest house, and I have a great family life. And this is me, and I'm the true progressive candidate because I really care about working people. That's what I see he's projecting there, and that's what he's trying to project on the campaign trail as well.
Something about that.
You just don't like it?
There's something that I just am not quite sure what to do with that. I mean, but they look like they're natural. It's almost like they were videotaped, like a natural setting. You know, it looks like home video. I'm not sure it is, but it looks like it's home video. And there's where he's like on the couch. And this is the unrealistic thing for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's on the couch. He's got the kid doing the homework on the couch while he's on the couch. Mm-hmm. And he's still awake. See, now that's unrealistic. Because me, I would be like... If I, the beer slipping out of my hand.
Oh, yeah, that would be great in a campaign ad.
I'm
going to
put that.
It's a good thing you're not doing them for him.
I'm going to run a campaign ad. I'm going to run a campaign. I'm going to put myself in the ad the way a guy really is. Right? All right.
Yeah. All right. That's how that works.
All right. I'll get the dishes. All right. Checking in at
number four.
President Trump was at the White House today, and he had a bunch of lawmakers over to talk about guns. And what they're going to do. And a lot of surprises came out of this meeting. We'll get to that in a second. But here's the thing, and this is how it all started off, and this is the part that wasn't a surprise, is he blamed Obama.
We also have a number of provisions which will...
You have support for that?
For...
Bipartisan support for what you're saying?
We had 54 votes in 2013, and most of those 54 voters are still in the Senate.
And you didn't have a lot of presidential backup.
President Obama did support it, but
that was your problem.
But there was a worry that he wanted to go further, frankly, and that was a concern for some of our guys.
All right, so what they're saying there, that was that Toomey and Joe Manchin and Pat Toomey. They had this proposal back in 2015, and they got close, and Obama was on board with it, but they couldn't get the other six in the Senate that they needed. Because there was concern that if they gave Obama this, he'd go further, even though that's all that they were asking for. And Trump, in his Trumpian kind of understanding of these things, is like, well, he wasn't supporting it at all, was he? No, he was supporting it. They could have done it. But then the issue was Republicans were fighting against it, saying, well, if we give them this, there's going to be more. So then today, the president actually called for things from the Obama era. Without realizing that he was calling for the same stuff. So there was the bump stock issue, which that's new. And the president said he's going to actually...
He'd like to ban them.
He's going to do it by himself. Executive order. He's going to ban it by executive order. Even though he hated executive orders back then, he's going to do that in this case.
That's what he's
going to do. Which would be great. I think most America would welcome that.
I think so.
And he was asking them if they would raise the age to 21. Do we have that, by the way? This is an amazing moment. He's asking them if they would raise the age to 21. And they're like, well, would you vote for it? And it was like, I would consider it. I would definitely consider it. No. We need you to know. Would you sign off if we vote for it? Will you sign it? And will you protect us from the NRA? You people are too afraid of the NRA. And now Breitbart's all over him.
Well, he said some things that Breitbart would not be proud of. And the NRA, I'm sure, wouldn't really like. One of the things he said, I don't know if we're going to get to this, about taking the guns away. Do we have that? He says, I like to take the guns early, take them guns first, and then go through due process second. Not sure the NRA is on board with that particular philosophy.
Yeah, I don't. They're not. But what are they going to? But there's going to have to be something here. He's going to have to come out. He comes out, full 2 feet down on the ground about something, and then he backs off because he's afraid of how they're going to react to it. And it's like. You can lead. Listen, the thing is, and they said this to him in the meeting today. Republicans said this to him. We can get things done with you because our core supporters who are afraid of gun control are not afraid that you're going to go too far. And core gun supporters like the idea of some things, like, for example, maybe changing the rules around purchasing the AR-15. That maybe there's a different... protocol for it. You move it up to 21 years old. And that style of a weapon, that frame of a gun, that muzzle velocity, all those, the particulars that surround that particular weapon and that class of weapon, changing the rules for owning those or how do you actually qualify to be able to purchase one of those. Those kinds of rules, a lot of responsible gun owners agree with that. But they're just afraid that if you know, there's so much propaganda out there. There's so much, you know, the Facebook pages and, you know, people get all animated about this when they say, well, if you do this, the Democrats are going to just grab your guns. So now Breitbart on their website are calling Trump the gun grabber for coming up. You know, and it's like this is why you can't really win, because everybody gets afraid.
Yeah.
All right. Get to your three, your two, and your one. But first, here is Judy telling us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom. Checking in at
number three.
Hi, I'm Hope Hicks. I think campaigns and the politics of Washington, D.C. are two totally different things. So I think now being a novice is much more jarring to me than being a novice on a campaign, because there are so many people that are new to it. You're all sort of trying to just figure everything out as it comes to you, whether you know what you have experience in it or not.
That was the communications director of the White House.
Yeah.
It sounded like Violetta's 12-year-old sister is what that sounded like to me. And I'm sorry, Violetta, that is a bit of a slam to your non-existent 12-year-old sister.
Mm-hmm. If she did have a sister as 12-year-old, she would be offended by that.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm offended for her.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Got that out of the way.
Now, Hope Hicks is 29 years old. She was made the communications director of the White House, not the spokesperson.
She's only 29.
Not an assistant communications director. She had spent a year in the Ivanka Trump world, helping with the Ivanka Trump brands, right? She'd worked at a New York PR firm right out of college. Mm-hmm. Her dad is a marketing executive for the NFL. She met the Trumps at the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Ends up transitioning from her private PR firm from a PR firm in New York to the Trump Organization, and then somehow gets sucked up into this whole world of the campaign.
Right. She's with him throughout the grueling campaign and by his side. Loyal by all accounts.
By all accounts, very loyal. By all accounts, wise beyond her years, but her years are still 29. So how much wiser can you really be? And she ended up getting involved in romantic relationships with two of the more controversial figures, both fired from the campaign and then the White House, Corey Lewandowski and now this Rob Porter guy, and the Portman guy. Mm-hmm. And they and in the meantime, then sits down in front of the House Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, which if you are a friend of the White House and you're sitting in front of that, it's going to go fairly easy for you, right? It's not the Mueller Committee. You're not sitting in front of the Mueller lawyers. You're sitting in front of people who are trying to help you in the House side. And she acknowledges that she told little white lies for the president from time to time. Well, see, that opens up a whole can of worms here. She did correct nothing about the Russia investigation, by the way, after her lawyer whispered in her ear that she had to say that. But if she said that in front of the House, which was patty cake compared to Mueller, what did she tell Mueller? And will she be called back in now to answer for what? Okay, not the Russian, but what little white lies did you tell? And you're under subpoena now. You have to answer those questions. And the White House canceled their press briefing today because they're going to be asked, because when Sarah Sanders or Rasha or whoever gets up there, they're going to be asked, what were the white lies? What were you guys lying to us about?
Kind of hope it's Rasha, don't you? Given the past, dealing with the Omarosa departure.
Yeah.
That didn't go great. But yeah. Look, she's loyal to the entire family. You saw Ivanka Trump tweet out her heartfelt, you know, thanks to her for everything she did. It's got to be tough for the Trumps because they did, even given her youth and age, they put a lot of responsibility on her shoulders and obviously thought she could handle it. But she's moving on.
Here is Sarah Sanders responding to this.
I've been thinking about for a while, so it's maybe surprising for you guys, but she's, it's not like it happened overnight.
It's surprising for you, but it's not like it happened overnight.
They're saying that the story that the White House is putting out is that this has been planned for quite some time. She had thought about it in the fall, and that this is not directly related to her testimony before the House Intelligence Committee.
Right? Well, they may have wanted to wait a week or two then, if they didn't want to do it like this. Again, you would think as a communications director, you'd think about that. You go, oh, no, we were planning on it.
People might link the two.
This may be one of the white lies that's being told in the White House. Just kind of thinking. And then I just have to say this, that they have to find a communications professional. Remember, she ended up with that job because Scaramucci flamed out.
After 11 days.
And then there was a professional before him that was doing it.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, who's it going to be? And remember when Donald Trump said he's going to hire just the best people? And he was referencing, when he said that, he was referencing Wilbur Ross, right? His commerce guy? Mm-hmm. Or what is it? What is Wilbur Ross? Commerce, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he was referencing him. We're going to have the best people. Like Wilbur Ross, they call him Wilbur. They're going to be the best people. That's what he said. And he's already lost over a dozen people out of the White House, and none of them could be described, I would say, as the best people. And Wilbur Ross, he took a shot at already, which is Wilbur falls asleep in meetings; they can't stand him. Please, I'm not going to sleep tonight. Now,
number two,
the NCAA is grappling with numerous scandals right now.
Uh oh.
LeBron James tore into the NCAA as a corrupt athletic organization. He says that's one of the reasons he chose to go straight out of high school into the NBA, which is no longer allowed, but was when he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And he said this has been going on for years.
NCAA is corrupt. We know that. I'm sorry. It's going to make headlines, but it's corrupt. I'm not a fan of the NCAA. I love watching March Madness. I think that's incredible. I'm not a fan of how the kids don't benefit from none of this. So it's kind of a fine line because I actually got a couple boys that could be headed in that direction. So there's going to be some decisions that we as a family have to make.
Whoa.
Don't get all of our ball on us. Please don't.
What's he saying? He's saying that they make billions off of our students, so you should pay them?
Yeah.
Basically. It's a whole mess. Yeah, it's a whole mess.
Well, they are paying them, apparently. I think right. We just learned that at Arizona.
Well, I mean, stuff like this happens, and everyone's like, oh, my God, do you hear that story about the basketball player getting paid? As if this hasn't been going on for decades.
Shocked to see there's gambling.
Stunned. Here's my $10 for my March Madness bracket.
Yeah, I think we're at a moment here. I think we're at another moment where they're going to have to figure this out because obviously there's a lot of cheating that goes on. They
there's
do it
too
in
many
football.
Stories there.
Yep.
There's a lot of ways to wire that too. They wire it through their boosters and whatever. But it's a bad deal because these kids. You see these kids.
Mm-hmm.
They show up for the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got they pull up in their Lamborghini.
I know, you're like,
for
wait
the
a
NFL
minute.
Draft. Well, wait, what?
How does that work? Yeah, right. Used to be their ma drove them in the Nissan Sentra or something.
You could tell the kids that didn't get paid because they're the one that wearing the ill-fitting suit,
right?
That's got
sleeves are a little long,
right? And the whole thing's kind of nothing quite works. And then there's the one guy who shows up and he's like Deion Sanders, right.
Gold chains,
yeah. And you're like, well, how does that? Wait, what? My mom worked 15 jobs in order for me just to be able to afford milk, And there was and he's got. A gold grill, and you're like, no, I don't know how that works.
Very right. Different today.
And finally, checking in at
number one.
Last night, Seth Meyers talked about the president endorsing Ted Cruz ahead of the Republican primary. But remember what he said about Ted Cruz last year?
President Trump today endorsed Senator Ted Cruz for re-election ahead of next week's Republican primary in Texas. And when he heard that, Ted Cruz smiled so big, 8 babies started crying.
Ted Cruz has that impact.
I was trying to explain to a friend of mine today mm-hmm. What the Ted Cruz thing was yesterday where he was talking about The Simpsons.
Yes.
And he wants America to be more like Homer and Bart because Homer may be done, but he's got a good heart. And Bart is a juvenile delinquent, mm-hmm. but who's a free spirit.
Sure.
But that's where America is. And
they're true Republicans.
Right.
But Lisa Simpson's a Democrat.
Right. Because she's too smart.
Bad.
And I'm like, they were like dumbfounded. They were like, what?
It's like, go through that again.
What? That's exactly what he said. Look it up.
He did
it's
say
right
it.
Up there.
And he's a Simpsons fan. It's not like he got the characters wrong.
Right. He loves the Simpsons.
He loves it.
He thinks it's a great testament to, you know, America.
Yes, it is.
I think I just heard a baby crying.
Okay. Judy's news in 2 minutes.
The top five at five.
It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 yes. WGN. Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart joins us right now. It's just a day of lawmakers and newsmakers today on the
Absolutely.
The program. We're getting it all in. We had a little an abbreviated program yesterday, and we have a bit of an abbreviation tomorrow too. As Northwestern plays in its Big Ten tournament first game.
That's right. Penn State tomorrow at night.
Go Cats!
Go Cats!
Go Cats!
Can I coach them?
We're good with Coach Collins.
Okay.
All right. Tom Dart is here. Sorry, Tom. Sorry, I had to be here for this.
Yeah. No, that's okay. Mm-hmm. What a loss for all of us that you're going to be shortened tomorrow.
A class action lawsuit. I'm just going to let that go. A class action lawsuit challenges your office here. I know. Which one is what he's going to be asking here?
I get sued on average. Three times a day on average, so it's hard to nail them all down at times.
He's got a catcher's mitt, and he just waits for the lawsuit to just, you know, come on and fire it right in here. But here, basically what's happening here is that you're concerned that that new rules, new protocols have gone into place here in terms of bail reform, as they're calling it. Last September, this went in, and you're concerned that people are getting out and being sent out to home monitoring here who might still be a danger. Is that my...
Yeah, and Ro, you know, I've been trying to put this in context for people. I've always been a leader in trying to reform the bail system. You know, start with the fact that objective outside observers noted that the average bond hearing lasted 22 seconds. That would be the public defender speaking, the state's attorney speaking, the judge speaking on this significant act. So nothing, you know, was significant going on. And as a result of that, we had the mentally ill pouring into the jail and poor people were charged with insignificant crimes. And so I said, you know, that's not what jails are for. Jails are for, you know, violent people, people who pose a threat to the community. So we need to change it. Changes were made and some really good things have happened there. But in the course of the changes, some other people that we never saw getting out before are now coming out in much larger numbers than ever before. And we're saying that, listen, that's not what I believe we were all talking about. And clearly putting them on our electronic monitoring program, which we monitor, it wasn't set up for that. It wasn't set up for violent people. It was set up for, you know, drug offenders, nonviolent people who can be kept in their house. And if for some reason they were to escape from electronic monitoring, mind you, it's their house. I don't have a, you know, correctional officer sitting outside their house. If they were to leave, chances are very limited danger to the community because they don't have a history of violence. These are people we're talking about who are caught with guns, people charged with armed violence, people charged with aggravated UUW. And that is not what it was set up for. And we've been saying, listen, we got to, you know, step back a little bit and look at this so that the reforms don't get thrown out the window because the bad people are going out and they're going to hurt other people.
So there's a nuance here. Here's a shocker. Let's try this at the government level, especially the county government level. Let's try this.
Yeah.
A nuance approach where somebody actually thinks about the differential in the court system, the differential between somebody who is a gun violator, has a gun, had access to a gun, and it shouldn't have had the gun and may have used it, whether they brandished it or whatever the case may be, and then you're going to send them out, and then somebody who would be getting, what's the minimum bail for you guys, like $250 or something like that? What is it?
It can be as low as that. It can be as low as anything. I mean,
yeah,
frankly,
but,
they cut it, frankly, everything. But
you got a bunch of people. But here's one of the other things that happens there. You got a bunch of people who get at $250 in bail, they can't afford it. They can't scrape the money together. They don't have anybody to call that's going to be able to scrape $250 in cash together. And this could be a very low-level crime, and they can't get out.
Yeah, and once again, Ro, these are it's expensive to house people here, and then you have to ask yourself the question, what is the ultimate reason we're housing them? We're supposed to be doing it because they're a danger to society, or in some cases, they won't show up for court. You know, we do have those issues. But if they're not a danger, then they shouldn't be in there, and they shouldn't be taking up all the money. We have plenty of bad, dangerous people that should be in jails and should stay in jails until their case is over, not these other people. And
why is there a push? So let's go to the nuance. Let's go to the detail.
Let's unwrap this.
Yes. We're going to unpack.
Unpack.
We're going to unpack.
That's the big cable news expression.
So who are the people that are, I mean, obviously you're getting sued by some people here, but who, what, define for us the difference between the people who should be getting out and shouldn't be getting out. I mean, do you have, without naming the people who they are, but give me some practical examples.
Sure. Sure. In the past, prior to these reforms, we would average about 2% of the people who would be given an electronic monitoring order had a gun offense of any nature attached to the charge. Now it's up to almost 25% of the people are charged with that. And we've seen these dramatic increases. So people who are charged with aggravated UUW, okay, so these are people with a bit of an issue, to put it lightly. That has increased by 57%. The people charged with armed violence, the number of those we see getting electronic monitoring orders has gone up 143%. And people charged as armed habitual criminals has gone up 582%. And so these are significant cases.
And why are they doing this?
I don't honestly know. I honestly don't know.
And who's doing it? Let's define who's doing it.
It's coming up at the bond hearing, and there's some very, very thoughtful judges, and the head of the new bond court is one of the best judges in the entire system, bar none. And so I think what is going on here is with the changes in the system, there hasn't been the thought put in that this needs to be evaluated weekly, biweekly, monthly, and let's see how this is playing out and are we liking it. Because they put together new criteria and new categories, and that all sounds good on paper, but then when you start seeing the actual people going out, you're saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. That might have sounded good in somebody's, you know, algorithm somewhere, but in reality, in the city of Chicago, with all of our issues with gun violence, are these the people that we want out, with the only protection being they have an ankle bracelet in their house? I mean, Ro, we have cases where people who are on electronic monitoring overdose because, you know, people can come in and out of their house. They can't be prohibited to bring in drugs. We've had people shot on their front porch on electronic monitoring. Those things already occur just by the nature of it. But if you have these other markers because your history is one of being around guns, that's a bit of a problem, and this is not the device set up for it. They should either be in custody here, or there should be a higher level of scrutiny being done by them, by some other.
Who needs to make this change? Is it the state's attorney's office, or is it the judges?
No, it was something that was done by a judicial order from the presiding judge's, chief judge's office to say, here's the difference in how we're going to go about setting the bonds. There was more of an effort put on, okay, let's not come up with crazy bond numbers when you're looking at a guy who's literally homeless and you're going to set a $1,000 bond and you know he can't come up with $100. You need to come up with 10%. He can't come up with $100, let alone, you know, he has no money. So
yeah.
that was very thoughtful. That made sense. But this is now, I think, the pendulum is swinging too far, and we need to sort of reel it in now before people get hurt.
So you're saying when the release on electronic monitoring, and there's a huge increase year to year on the number of people who are put in on electronic monitoring, you're saying that if there's some sort of a violent past or maybe there's a security threat, there needs to be some further review. And is that that being challenged, the idea that there even shouldn't be a further review if you see other things in their past that might be violence?
This whole thing is so bizarre. It's like, who in their right mind can't argue with the fact that when we're alerted this person has violence in the background, we shouldn't be slowing the thing down and reviewing it a little bit? But that's apparently the sticking point. They're saying, who are you? A judge has made an order. Well, I'll tell you who I am. I'm the one that runs the program. I don't even have to have the program. You can't order me into a program that's a voluntary program that the sheriff's office operates. We already have about 200 people that we get orders for, but we can't put them on electronic monitoring because they don't have a house. I've told people, a little bit tricky. I can't take them to Grand Park and put a monitor on a tree and say, you got 100 feet around the tree. You better not leave it. You can't do those things. And we already have 200 people doing it. And these people that are suing me, they've never once objected to the fact that I have these 200 people on average who we can't find houses to. But now all of a sudden they're objecting because I'm saying I've got a handful of people that I believe I'm not capable of monitoring because of their danger background and with their charges.
Mm-hmm. All right. Glad you've got the job, and I don't. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate
Good luck.
It.
Oh, thank you so much. It's such a great job.
I would say, you know, I'll trade with you any day. I would not trade with you any day.
Oh. So, yeah. That makes me feel great. Yeah, thank
there you. There
you
go. Congratulations, Tom.
Thanks,
right.
guys.
Goodbye. Thanks, Tom.
Tom Dart, County Sheriff.
Sheriff Dart.
All right. We will, let's see here right now. Judy Pilock tells us what's coming up at the top of the hour news. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up, Kara Phillips is going to join us. And you know that name from CNN.
Sure. She had the last interview with Billy Graham, last sit-down interview before his he passed away at the age of 99.
And we thought we would share some of her thoughts. She was a very, when he passed away a few days ago, very compelling stories about him, very interesting stuff. Mm. So we will talk about that. And then a Russian sex worker in a Thailand jail.
Oh, gosh.
So she has all the secrets about Donald Trump. We'll tell you that story. Boy. Oh, boy.
Mm. We have a choice whether to implode and disintegrate emotionally and spiritually as a people and a nation, or whether we choose to become stronger.
That's Billy Graham, who's lying in honor at the Capitol right now, before his the funeral for him on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it great to see, for a brief, fleeting moment in time, people, the dignity, the respect, the civility of people coming together at the Capitol Rotunda? You know, you just see people stopping and taking in something, a very important moment together.
Even today, we had the president and Jeff Sessions, you know, sort of joking with each other an hour after the president berated Jeff Sessions on Twitter in front of 30 million people. It was a little weird
moment.
It was a little weird, but it is to the power of him. We talked about him last week a little bit, or right after he passed away, I mentioned Billy Graham's legacy, because I think there's an entire generation of people now who are not familiar with him, because he's basically been out of public life for two decades. And they're almost two decades. That was from 9/11 that we just played. That's one of his one of the last times was really, you know, very, very public. His son has taken over some of the business. His son's a very, very different character than Billy Graham was. Billy Graham was sort of a non-denominational, apolitical figure, although involved in politics, involved in a lot, you know, in the lives of presidents going back to Eisenhower.
Yeah, they said it met with every president since Truman. And was a big part of the lives of several of them. George W. Bush credits him with leaving alcoholism and returning to his faith. He prayed with Hillary Clinton during the Monica Lewinsky affairs, vacationed with the Bushes, the senior Bushes. And Bill Clinton came to know him as a governor of Arkansas, developed a relationship with him there.
And Kara Phillips, who people will know and love from her many years at CNN. I won't say how many, just a few years at CNN. It's the right way to play that, Kara. Don't worry about it. Is in the, has...
But see, I remember you from when I was a young reporter in Green Bay, Wisconsin. You've been around in that Chicago market.
Oh, my.
Get out.
Man,
wow.
You're okay. He's, all right. Don't even begin to start with me, Kara. We're gonna go. We're some of the veterans now of this little industry. This is our generation. But the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. There's one, Billy Graham and Me, 101 inspiring personal stories from presidents, pastors, performers, and other people. And you wrote about your experiences with him. And I saw you last week on CNN. Mm-hmm. It was last week, or was it 2 days ago? I don't know. You know these weeks.
Yeah, no, it was last week when he died. Yes.
As you know, now the news cycle is such that we've lost all track of time. But there is it was a beautiful thing, actually, as you described, you know, who he is and how important he was in a lot of ways. He was not a televangelist. People, I think this is one of the confusions here. Mm-hmm. People think he was like a televangelist, you know, like an Ernest Angley or a Jim Baker or something.
Jim Baker.
Yeah.
Right. No way.
Not that figure. No, he did not have a television. He did these gigantic public sermons that where he'd speak to tens or in some cases hundreds of thousands of people. Some
stadiums.
Yeah.
Still stadiums on these crusades.
Wow. And was such
revivals, crusades. Right.
Right. And he did. And he was, you know, he was a tent revivalist. You know, he was part of it. And that doesn't really exist anymore. But he was really he wasn't cramming religion down your throat, and he wasn't trying to make a buck off of it the way that those other. He wasn't selling you some sort of like prepper food, you know, that was blessed by his dog, you know, and he wasn't doing any of that kind of stuff.
No, he didn't go there. That's
no.
True.
So let's talk about your experiences with him.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the book, and so you read the chapter. That's kind of how everything started. It was actually a very beautiful moment. I pitched to do a documentary. Actually, my producer and I, who just love Billy Graham, pitched to do an hour for the doc unit, and we did. So we spent a year with his family and traveling, you know, back to his college and his roots. And
here in Wheaton, Illinois.
Oh, right. Yes. We went to Wheaton, exactly where he met his wife, Ruth, who also was an absolutely amazing woman. And their marriage was so beautiful. And I remember her saying how she used to sleep in his sport coach because she missed him so much when he traveled. I mean, just.
Oh, my gosh.
Their love affair was incredible. And just as a side note, since that struck a chord with you, mm-hmm. when she was slowly passing, you know, she took a while for her to pass. She had a lot of ailments and losing her eyesight. And he told me how every night when that was going on, he would go in, hold her hand. She would listen. He would watch old romantic movies, and they would just hold hands, and he would say it was just as romantic as when they first met. I mean, you talk about a true love affair and a commitment, and I asked him about that too, and I know, gosh, there's so many ways I could go in this interview with you guys, but mm-hmm. one of the things I remember the most was saying, you know, asking him, you know, how did you create that? How did you create this beautiful marriage and this life and live so scandal-free and all these years and all the attention and the popularity? And he told me two things. Number one, he stayed in the Word every single day. He never, ever, you know, took his nose out of that Bible. Mm-hmm. He was a continuing student every day of his life. And number two, he understood temptation. He knew he was a man. He knew he was living in a world with good and evil and all kinds of temptations. So discipline and avoiding temptation was a huge thing for him. And he made sure he wasn't, you know, in a room alone. You mentioned his relationship with Hillary Clinton and mm-hmm. among the Bushes, you know, all the presidents, et cetera. He would never be in a room alone with a woman, including Hillary Clinton. I mean, he was very, very careful how he conducted his life. But you mentioned the book that I wrote the chapter for. So it came the day we were supposed to have our interview. I mean, all year I've been working on this documentary. And, you know, we were saving the interview for his final crusade, his last revival that was in 2005. And it was in New York. Mm-hmm. And so we had everything set. The time was set. And I got a call that he wasn't feeling well. And that it was off. Well, as you can imagine, I was devastated. I had to have the last interview with Billy Graham. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a year in the making. And a long story short, there was a lot of back and forth and a lot of stress and conversations. And finally, I get the call at the last minute. He's okay. He's good to go. You've got the final interview. And I remember being so stressed and so worked up and so beside myself. I mean, I wasn't even dressed properly. I didn't even have a chance to brush my hair. I had to put it up in a clip. I mean, I didn't have a chance to look at all my notes because it happened at such a last minute. And I arrive, and there he is sitting in the chair, like, blah, 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 you know, the bright light. It was like the angels were circling above him. He was just this calm, beautiful soul sitting in this chair. And I was so frazzled, and I went and I sat down, and it just dawned on me at that moment, I'm sitting in front of America's pastor, the most beautiful spiritual human being I've ever known of and read about and studied and listened to. I'm just going to ask him if we can pray because I'm a wreck. And I looked at him and I said, I hope this isn't out of line or inappropriate. I know I'm a journalist. I'm not supposed to take a side here or there, but I am so frazzled right now. This is why. Could we just pray? And his face, I mean, Anna and Ro, lit up like you would. I mean, it was like he was shocked and amazed, but so thrilled that I asked him. And he said, why, of course. And he reaches over and he grabs my hand and I hold his hand and he prayed. And I just felt this whoosh come through my body and every ounce of stress and was gone. And I didn't even look at my notes. And we sat there and had this unbelievable interview. And I will never, ever forget it to the day I die. It was just one of those beautiful moments that you don't get as a journalist.
No.
They're very rare.
You know, you wonder in the social media-esque world in which we live now, right, where we're tribalizing and breaking apart into these, you know, whether it's Facebook groups or Twitter groups or whatever it is, you know, figures like Billy Graham, I'm not sure how they come to be anymore. You know, there are some pastors who, you know, are out there that are Joel Osteen, I think, comes immediately to mind, who seems to be fairly non-controversial. But almost everybody that you know tries to rise to that level gets assailed at some level, right? That they get at some point on the ascendancy, and there's, you know, they tear them down on whether it's a personal peccadillo or something else, and Billy Graham never had that. Mm-hmm. Billy Graham was never assailed as a charlatan, and there have been plenty of them over the years, right? I mean, there's
absolutely
a lot of bad figures in that business, if you will. But Billy Graham was not one of them, and Billy Graham is one of the guys who, you know, one of those people of faith who really was all about spirituality, and he didn't, and he was about uplifting and aspirational things. And we no longer are in the business of aspiring; we are now in the business of tearing each other down over the most simple things. It's just easier to be a troll than it is to be an inspiration. And the guys like Billy Graham, I know the president had some very kind words for him today, but I would like the president to spend a little bit of time learning about. He says he was at the Yankee Stadium.
So his dad brought him. Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there's going to be some fact checking on that. But whatever that happens to be, you know, can you sort of look at what that body of work was all about? Because again, he pastored all those presidents the way up to and including Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. Right, had a relationship with him.
And this is. As I got to know him over the years and his family and his best friends, here is what made him so remarkable. Yes, I agree with you, Ro. He didn't have to worry about social media. He wasn't involved in that whole social media world. And the benefit of all that, since a very young age, he was always against materialism. I mean, even when he started preaching, he took a strong stance on temperance and material. You know, he was against materialism, and he lived a very simple life. I remember Bev Shea, you know, one of his best friend of 60 years, who used to sing sermons with him. He said, you know, he was a man of simple taste. He loved to go to McDonald's. He loved to stop and just talk to people on the street corner. He said, I'll never forget when he went into the hospitals and he was praying with Vietnam vets that were face down in stretchers dying. And he got underneath them and looked them in the eyes and talked to them. You know, they described him as gentle and a bridge builder. And also, too, don't forget what he did for civil and human rights. It was back in the 50s. I think it was 1952. And he went to Mississippi for a crusade. And he saw the ropes put up and that the blacks were not allowed to come into his crusade. And he, in 1952, he said, oh, absolutely not. These ropes will come down. There are no segregated meetings in my world. Every man is equal before Christ. And that just blew people away. Yeah. I mean, people didn't know what to do, what to say. And that's the Billy Graham that I thought was so strong and so remarkable, and not influenced by social media, not influenced by the sale of things or tickets or speeches, or he really lived a simple life and was against that materialistic world. Yeah. And live scandal free. Yeah. It was really quite remarkable.
Yeah. Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer, right there. It's a funny thing because again we live with all of these other characters, and his son is a little bit far more political than he was, mm-hmm. and involved in some of these other kinds of things. And I think that
he's gotten crucified for it too.
Yeah. Well, I think
word to use. But.
Yeah, but I mean I think that there's some. You know, the family brand wasn't really about, getting involved in street-level politics and taking a position.
Right.
For against Republicans or Democrats or whatever it was. And Franklin certainly has done that. But mm-hmm. It's a different world. And I think we just need to stop. I think there's a lot. And, you know, thank you for joining us and telling us the story, Kara, because I think that this has – understanding and looking back at some of these figures who did this in a different way is a good – lesson, I think, for us today. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm trying to say.
And Anna mentioned Truman. I'll be real quick. Anna mentioned Truman, mm-hmm. and you may remember that's one of two controversies he ever got involved with his whole life. You know, he met with Truman, they prayed, but then Billy talked to reporters, and he let them take pictures of him outside the White House, and Truman was furious and thought that Reverend Graham did this for the publicity. And I remember Billy Graham saying to me that was the biggest mistake. That's the lesson he learned, yeah. that he had to stick to preaching and the politicians would stick to politics. And I'll tell you, his wife reminded him of that every time he met with the president.
Wow. All right.
There Great story.
Kara Phillips, thank you so much. Appreciate
thanks,
it, Kara.
Thanks.
Thanks for reminding me how old I am. Thanks. I appreciate it.
You bet. You're always young in my eyes, bro. Anna keeps you young.
Thank you. Thanks, Kara. All right.
Thanks, Kara.
Kara Phillips, CNN. There you go. All right. Let's check in with Judy, see what's happening at the bottom of the hour news. Yeah, it's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Our hero.
Yes.
Joe Aurelio is here. Aurelio's Pizza. I don't know.
Oh,
have
my
people
gosh.
Ever heard of Aurelio's Pizza?
I think so. It's been around for, I think, a while. Over half a century.
It is, now in 2016, awarded Tribune's top 25 pizzas for the thin crust cheese and sausage. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people on the South Side would say, what do you mean top 25? How about top one?
A lot of people on the South Side would correct you, too, and say sausage.
Yeah, well, that's true, too.
Instead of sausage.
Yes, well, it's, you know.
They might say that.
Yes, I'm near North Side, which is even worse. But I do enjoy the fennel and the sausage. All right, so now Joe is doing something very special here. In the aftermath of all the things that are happening in Chicago and obviously the death of Police Commander Paul Bauer, this is a moment where Chicago is, from this tragedy, some triumph is emerging here, and people are getting together to understand and try to come up with solutions, mm-hmm. and try to come up with new strategies for dealing with crime in this city and dealing with guys who shouldn't be out on the street,
right.
making sure that they're not on the street.
Do what we can to support the family.
Exactly. And you're doing a thing for the Get Behind the Vest program, which is part of the program that's initiated by the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation to go out and buy vests, bulletproof vests for police officers who otherwise would not be after your first vest when you get out of the academy, you get your first vest as part of your uniform allotment. Then after that, you got to buy it on your own. And guys don't do it. And vests expire after 7 years.
Yeah.
And depending, especially, they even faster depending on how you use them, how you store them at night, mm-hmm. When you're not working.
Right. If you've been shot at or not.
Right. All those kinds of things. Sweating. There's all kinds of reasons that they expire. And yeah. so now That's where the Police Memorial Foundation has come in. And in these the last 5 years, 6 years now that we've been doing this, we've been able to all the expiring vests we've been able to replace, and now we're on a yearly maintenance program. Of every year, there's going to be a percentage of one-seventh of the vests are going to be expiring every year, and then we're going to outfit the police with those as we continue on. And Joe, thank you so much for doing this. Explain what you're going to be doing.
Well, thanks for having me tonight. I really appreciate this. So what we're going to do is on March 5th through March 11th is do a fundraiser from our 1212 South Michigan Aurelio's Pizza location, right at the corner of Michigan and Roosevelt. We are going to have a party on March 5th for the Chicago police, their friends and family, a buffet dinner, which will last from 8 to 11, and it'll be $20 for adults and $10 for the kids, and 50% of the proceeds from that night will go right back to buy vests. I've already committed to 10 vests no matter what happens on our fundraiser, so I'm hoping to get 30, 40 vests when this is all done. And then what we're doing is every day from Monday through Sunday, March 5th through the 11th, every carryout, dining room, and delivery order, we're going to donate 20% back to buy vests for the Chicago Police Department.
How about that? I know you have a history during your long history here in Chicago of giving back to the community and understanding that just seems to be how you guys are wired and a piece of what you do.
Yeah. My dad started the business in 1959, so this is our 59th year, and we started in Homewood, Illinois, and now we have 40 locations across six states.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And my dad was always known for sponsoring the baseball teams, the band, the theater, the church. Whoever came through the door and needed help, he was always there for them. So that's something that's been instilled in me, and I still been doing it through our business for 59 years now, and all of our franchises have the same values of giving back to their communities they do business in.
Continuing the tradition.
Absolutely.
That is awesome. Awesome.
So 1212 South Michigan Avenue, like you said, Michigan and Roosevelt, it all starts there, right?
That's correct.
And that's starting next week, Monday through Thursday. Right? Is that how this
Monday? Well, Monday through Sunday.
Monday through the 11th. Oh,
yes,
through the 11th. Oh, got it. Oh, look at that.
Yep.
Even better.
Yep.
Even better. And Aurelio's, of course, is one of those traditions. This is one of the fights that we like to have in this town, too.
I know.
About whose pizza's better, north side or south side.
Right.
And, you start talking about some north side place, and people go, what about Aurelio's?
Yeah.
And I don't like to fight with southsiders about a lot of things.
You shouldn't fight about pizza as a general rule, I think, in Chicago.
This is the first time I've had it.
Holy really?
God. I know. Yeah. I'm
this is
North
like immediately Sider. At my top of my power rankings right now.
Absolutely.
It's amazing. This is really good.
And that's high praise because this is Mr.
Food. Yeah, I ate quite a bit of pizza.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Are you from Mars? No, I'm just kidding. Where you been?
No, he's from
59 years.
See, he's from like way up northwest.
Northwest Burbs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was a thing. He doesn't.
Very good. Thanks for bringing in the pizza.
Doesn't understand it. I didn't understand it. As a Northsider, I didn't understand it until... I started working, and I started working with people from the South Side. I was not allowed to be around Southsiders when I was a kid.
No. Your parents kept you sheltered
exactly.
from that.
They're not a Southsider, are they? always with people talking about Aurelio's, and then I finally had it. I'm like, oh my God. Because you creep up right to the river here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, is there
right.
something about the river that you're not willing to cross? What's happening?
Oh, no,
here?
We cross the river if we have to and the order's big enough. And here's the great thing is, hopefully for opening day for the Cubs this year, we're opening in one block north of Wrigley Field at the corner of Clark and Grace.
So all those Northsiders who haven't had the opportunity to really, enjoy the pizza, now they have the chance. Look
Very
at that row.
Very interesting. So your first four, so you're in six states, but it was never north of the river.
No.
That was the sort of thing. I don't know. Congratulations
it's a big
on
step.
That.
Yeah.
We finally made it across the river, so we're happy to be up there.
Come a long way, Joe.
It's a big deal, Joe. Mm-hmm.
It is.
I'm starting to feel like, that we can have world peace now.
I know.
You
can
have
we get Jared Kushner
to...
on this?
Mm-hmm. It is really excellent. Because there's, I was trying to figure
it
out like what the secret is with the pizza. Because, there's stuff. It's the crust.
I think it's the oven or something.
The crust and the sauce.
Well, the sauce.
The sauce.
No, the cheese.
The cheese is so good.
No, but there's something.
The oven.
The things that define a difference, because his sauce is, there's a lightness to it.
Right, it's almost
overdone.
Non-existent.
It's there, though.
Yeah, but you can definitely taste the tomatoes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
it's like the perfect blend of the cheese, the ingredients, and the sauce, but the crispy crust.
I love talking pizza.
Huge.
I can do this for an hour.
I know, I'm getting hungrier and hungrier.
When I left Chicago to go to college, it was the worst thing in the world. I went to college in the middle of Ohio and in a rural area. And they were like, pizza, all you think about was, Domino's or Little Caesars.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what? What are you people talking about?
I know.
What are you talking about?
It's robbed of a life experience there, those people.
The thing about Chicago, and I'm sorry, New York, the New York pizza's all the exact same to me. It's all the
super
exact
greasy
same.
And super thin, and you can't even pick it up.
But I can't tell the difference between any of them. I can go, like, if you put, like, a taste test, like, you put five pizzas from Chicago.
I'm with
thin
you.
Crust pizzas in front of me. I could tell you each one of them and where they're from.
But Joe, I've been told, because I, like, quiz other pizza shops when I'm around the country, like, you know, how do you do this or that? And then people, like, I've talked to local pizzerias around here, and they say it's the water has something to do with this. Is that true, or are they just messing with me?
No, the Chicago water definitely has a difference. The minerals that are in it really makes a difference when you're making your dough. We have stores in Las Vegas and Minnesota, down in Florida. The water is definitely not as good down in Florida. So we actually put filters on our water down there to help it out.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So have you ever think about maybe trucking the water down there?
We've thought about that. Just bottling Chicago water and selling it.
Yeah. I mean, that's something.
Yeah.
That would really be something.
That's my idea out there. Don't take it.
Don't worry.
Joe's,
no one's ever thought
Joe's
of that before,
water.
Joe. But so what other states are you into? You're in Florida, Nevada.
Yeah, we're
in Minnesota.
Arizona.
Georgia. Marietta, Georgia, and Minnesota. So
how's it going
states.
In Marietta, Georgia? What are they thinking about it there?
They love it.
Really?
There's
my
a lot of Chicagoans
there.
That moved down that way, and they recognize the name, and they have a great
That's
following.
That's deep south side right yep. there, Marietta,
for sure.
Georgia.
For sure.
Wow.
And then Naples and Fort Myers. We have a lot of snowbirds that go down there for the winter.
I've actually driven by your Aurelio's in around 41. You're
correct,
right on 41
correct,
in
yes.
Naples. Yeah, I have driven by there, and I thought that the first time I did it, I thought that can't be the same. I thought someone was stealing your name or you had, like, you know, some long lost cousin. Mm-hmm. You know how that can sometimes happen
that
too, where
can
the
happen.
Cousin takes
a recipe
and,
slightly alters it, moves across the street,
but
and
that's yours.
Before you know it.
Absolutely. We ship the cheese that's specifically made for Aurelio's Pizza. Our sausage is homemade right here. I own the company that makes it.
Oh.
So there's no fillers, no preservatives. It's made fresh. That's shipped down there. And then the dough is made on premise.
Uh-huh.
So it's as authentic as you can get. Just tastes like Chicago.
Has it altered at all over the years, or is it exactly the same, would you say, other than the toppings probably changed to people's tastes?
When my dad first started in 1959, they believed that you had to pre-cook the pork before you put it on the pizza.
Mm.
So that's probably the biggest thing that's changed. We put our sausage on raw, and it cooks on the pizza, and the flavor, kind of
Soaks
through.
In. That's probably, I was just having some of the...
Yeah, so the sausage.
The sausage. And it does, you get the... I don't think in the 20 teens you're allowed to talk about it like this, but the grease.
Go for it,
because you can't say grease anymore, because then people go, oh, you're going to have heart disease. I go, too late. it sweats across the pizza in the proper kind of way. There, sweat's not the right word either, but you know what I mean. It distributes
it
properly.
Out.
Yeah, there you go. It oozes. It distributes along the surface area of the cheese, and it just makes it perfect.
It is perfect.
Yeah, you got
nothing
you got
short
it
of perfect. Right
and I
there.
Like that you did. You buy the sausage company? It was owned by somebody else, and you bought
actually,
it.
Actually, I did. I bought it 10 years ago and made my last payment 4 days ago.
Oh, that's congratulations!
So it's official.
Sausage company. Yeah. Done.
Yep.
So do you sell sausage to other places, or just
no?
Use
just
it for
through
your...
our chain.
Yeah.
It's secret recipe.
It is a recipe that just
you could tell
for Aurelio's pizza for sure.
Oh,
I'm sure.
It's totally different. And that's the thing. Like you go to there's other you know I. Again, I could tell you the sausage. You just throw the sausage in front of me from these different places, and I
break it down.
You.
I can tell by the crust.
Yeah,
you give me the crust, the different. I know.
Yeah, see, that's the way it goes.
Yeah,
that's what proves we're Chicagoans.
We're lucky.
Thank God we're able to say that. Hey, how do you feel about going up on the north side by the Cubs?
Yeah,
well, I'm excited. You know, the Cubs have such great following, and a lot of Chicagoans from the south side are Cubs fans.
How do the Sox fans feel about this? Because I mean, you got
is it a betrayal?
I'd say you got a lot of Sox fans.
Well, I don't know. We have our 1212 South Michigan location. Southsiders can go there, and the Northsiders can now go one block north of Wrigley Field there and enjoy the Aurelio's pizza from the south side.
There's something
south,
to this.
South
this is
meets north.
This is kind of piece through pizza thing. We can
I know.
Get
this
started.
This is a very interesting thing. These are things I never thought I would ever see. I never thought I would, see an Aurelio's north of the river.
I
came close. I mean, the Michigan and Roosevelt. Okay.
Yeah.
I get it.
Uh-huh.
I get it. But you had to go. You were in the South Loop for a while, right?
Yep,
that was your furthest north for a while.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And that gentleman had passed away, unfortunately, in the store closed. Uh-huh. So I wanted to
was
reopen.
Was that a franchise? Was that
yours? It was a franchise.
Yeah. Because it was never the same as the other one. I'm sorry to say. And it was never the same as the other ones. You know, we would order from there downtown, like all my, into the office.
Yeah. Didn't remind you of the
and
real...
Then, and the Southsiders would complain.
Oh.
About, I'm like, this seems very good to me. But, it's pizza, bad pizza is very rare. But when you do get it, you know it. And it was never bad. But it just didn't... Everybody would go, that's not right.
Yeah, sometimes it could be the ovens, the pans. Everyone has the same recipe, the same ingredients. It just... we could all have the same cake mix here, and your cake would be burnt, yours would be
soft in the middle,
and mine might,
that's my that's my history.
So even though you have the same ingredients, it doesn't always come out the same.
Yeah, we could, you know, we really are talking pizza here. We could do this for hours.
Isn't it funny? It's like Kevin's over there salivating. I'm glad.
I actually ran out of my pieces here, so
I know I've eaten.
Just devoured mine.
So I need a commercial break.
I know. Well, that was the thing. I jumped in and I acted all interested in talking to Joe. When I walked into the green room,
it's very distracting.
But did you notice how I just pirouetted right around you, straight to the pizza?
I had my
right
back to you at one point. I'm sorry if that was rude, but the pizza was right there, so it's delicious.
All right, so Aurelio's Pizza. Top 25 pizzas in Chicago for thin crust. That is, you gotta go top five, maybe top three.
Yeah.
I would go top three.
This and I'm is not the best pepperoni I've ever had, and I'm not kidding.
There's you know pepperoni the pepperoni too? You do the pepperoni too?
And I'm normally not a pepperoni guy, but this one is just something different about it.
Yep, the one we picked, it's all natural. It doesn't cup it and have all the grease piling up in the middle. It stays nice and flat. It's a leaner pepperoni.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Again, it's got to distribute.
You don't need the paper towel on the top?
It's got to distribute.
I hate when it cups. That's a great call.
How do you do that? How do you get it to
cup? It's not going to tell you.
No, it does not cup.
How do you get it not to cup?
The company that we buy it from, they have maybe about 8 or 10 different pepperonis to choose from, and it's one of the more expensive ones, but it's a higher, less fat content.
It's so good.
Yeah.
That's less fat. Great. So there's like no calories in this one is what you're telling me?
That's a great commercial right there.
I know, really. Kevin's ready for an endorsement.
Pizza. Our pepperoni doesn't cup.
I'll eat this all day, every day.
This is the healthy stuff.
Yeah.
Guys, this one doesn't cup. We're good.
Yeah.
No cuppage on our pepperoni.
Hey, that's an important thing.
It is. Because I hate when it cups and it gets like crispy and weird. Yeah.
Cheap pizza, and I know that's sort of an oxymoron, but cheap pizza, and you get it gets too crispy, and then then it's hard by the time you're trying to eat it, and then it hurts the top of your mouth. Yeah, it's just wrong.
Save a couple pieces for tomorrow morning. You'll see it's still a delicious pizza in the morning cold.
Well, tell Cochran to check it out tomorrow.
We just leave it here. Although that
Steve,
does happen.
Steve, we got you something.
On a Friday night, people leave food here, and there's still people on Sunday at midnight eating it. And you're like, no.
This looks good.
No refrigeration. No.
Right, you're like, 6 p.m. what day?
All right, Aurelio's, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for what you're doing.
You are... the flagship store, 1212 South Michigan Avenue. You've got this event that is going to family and friends event from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Monday, where the money is going to go to the Get Behind the Vest initiative by the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. All the details are at AureliosPizza.com, by the way, and on your Facebook page and all the other places you reach out, right?
Yep.
And then throughout the entire week at this
1212
store.
South Michigan.
A portion of the proceeds goes to this.
20% of every sale. So if you have an office, you want to treat your office workers to some pizza
good
and help out
it.
The Chicago Police, this is the time to do it.
All right.
Awesome.
There you go.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, thanks for having
God
me.
God bless. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for and also I would like to say thank you for the non-cupping pepperoni. We've learned something. If there's one thing we've learned today that we'll take with us for the rest of our lives.
I'll never look at pepperoni the same way again.
It's the issue
that it's like, ew, that's cupping.
Yeah, such a thing as non-cupping pepperoni. Who knew?
Yeah, that's my lead story at 7.
Tee it up.
This just in. Pepperoni doesn't cup. All right, Martier, speaking of that, what is your top story at 7?